By the way, next time we record, I can just be playing Spelunky on PS4, and you guys will never know.
What? Oh, what? I don't understand. Oh, because it's Steam. Right, I get you. But you see, I'll be playing Destiny at the same time, and that would make
sense. Then if you ever give me shit, I can just like give it right back to you.
Yeah, it's true.
Let's be fair here. Like, at least with Spelunky, like, you can get distracted with that. Destiny is just it's mindless.
Yeah, there's not much to do. There's not much.
It's barely a game. Come on.
It is barely a video game. Like, it's a chat simulator where you shoot dudes.
For the week of October the 4th, 2014. My name is Conrad Kirby, also known as Thurbleton. Joined with me today is self-confessed cynic.
Hello!
What's up, man? How you been?
I'm actually doing really well. I don't know. I'm drinking watered down with Diet Coke, Johnny Walker, Black Label, and I can't stand it.
I'm very sorry. That depressed sign in the background, I'm not sure if it's because of Johnny Walker or the watered down nature of it.
It's really not good.
You don't put Coke in Johnny Walker. Any whiskey, just drink the whiskey, damn it. All
I
right?
can't. It makes me die.
I have
slowly.
To say your name first. Ian Saunders, a.k.a. Squiddle.
I'm Squiddle. Hi, guys.
Hey. So you don't like Johnny Walker?
I hate it. This is the fucking worst.
I love him. Anger.
So
I'm
bad.
Mad at you.
So bad.
Scott Warner, also known as Duran. What are your feelings on Johnny Walker?
I don't know, man. I'm enjoying myself a screwdriver right now.
Again?
Yeah.
See, vodka I can do.
That was why I had to go away real quick before we started recording, is I needed to get myself a straw so I'm not slurping my screwdriver like some animal.
Slurp it to scissor like a screwdriver? I don't know. I didn't go with that there.
I find it kind of, you know, I'm not sure if it's a good thing or a bad thing. It's just something that, you know, we're just used to. No one has yet to drink scotch during the Scotch Cast.
Oh, no, I have.
Oh, you
have?
Have you? Okay.
Yes, have I you? Have. I have not all announced right. it, and I don't have it with me right now, but I have definitely had a finger or two of scotch.
I kind of like how it's this mysterious. We don't know when it happened, but it did. Maybe for this episode, I'm going to...
I believe it was for the inaugural episode.
I'm going to try this. Matt Glassell?
Glassell.
Dang.
It's whatever. Are you drinking scotch? Glassell. I'm not drinking scotch. I had water, but then I ran out of water.
That's fair.
I mean, come on, he's barely of age.
Like, that stopped anyone before.
Yeah, yeah.
It's true.
All right, so yeah, we are a podcast that occasionally talks about video games. Let's talk about...
Did we steal that? Did you steal that from Polaris? Is that what just happened?
I know, I think I stole that from the co-optional podcast.
Yeah, that's the...
Same thing. We do.
I hate you. Yeah,
talking about drinking right now.
It's also the truth. Yeah, all right.
You cannot drink anything in the game Destiny.
I would say more often than not, we talk about video games.
We talk too much about video games.
I think we talk about video games almost the entirety of the show. Unless Noob is on.
Let's talk about Destiny, you guys. That's a video game.
Destiny! Oh, my God.
About video games.
There's a strange correlation between Destiny coming out and us not recording, and might be because... Either one of us or some of us played that game for quite a bit.
For the record, like, Duran, would you say Destiny is more of a video game than Dear Esther? Yeah.
Wow.
There is a button in Destiny.
It is because there are objectives.
Nice.
Yes.
That's probably, yeah.
You do have to press a button in Destiny.
Yes, you must press the X button. It is very important.
But I will say that no matter how much of each game I've played, I enjoyed Dear Esther far more than I have Destiny. I don't even know. I think I might have Battered Wife Syndrome.
Yeah, Dear Esther kind of has a more compelling story.
Yeah, it's a little bit, you know, a little bit more compelling. Wait, okay, wait. All right, so Destiny came out 2 weeks ago, or like a week and a half,
It came out sometime in the past.
Yeah, and then we all got the game. I think
I don't think we all, like, Squiddle, I don't think, has one on account of he doesn't have a PS4, because that's only out for PS4, clearly.
It's going to come out for PC, right, guys? I mean, right?
Totally.
Yeah?
Hopefully. Would you play it if it did?
Yes, I would.
I don't own one of the new systems yet, so I don't have it either.
There was, like, some fairly recent rumors that it might be hitting PC at some point, so I don't know, maybe. But it's a Bungie game, so probably not.
Yeah.
I'd like to believe it'll hit Mac before it hits PC.
Ubuntu. You know, guys, I'm waiting for it to go to my PS4 emulator that I've been working on. It's not a success yet. I can at least get a couple, one or two frames to work before it crashes.
Yeah, it's at 2 frames per second and crashes after 5 minutes.
Yeah. People may not remember that Bungie was Apple.
I know. Yeah. You guys remember Halo was a Mac-only RTS?
I also remember when, like, Bungie used to make video games. Shit.
Wait, do you mean they enjoyed making video games, not making both?
What happened to Bungie? Like, what?
They got bought by Microsoft.
They sold out, I think. They sold their soul.
I think really what happened to Bungie is pretentiousness?
Nice.
Bungie just became so fucking, like, up their own ass that, like, they just, of course, you have to remember, like, think about it this way. Like, there are people who work in that company that released this game, and, like, this thing is a wild success. This is going to change video games. People thought that. Like, people said that, and there were clearly people in a boardroom somewhere that thought
that. Doesn't everyone say that when they release a video game, though? Like, really?
So they
yeah, but I really feel like Bungie really meant it.
do you remember their launch event? I was telling them the reveal event where they fucking shipped everyone over and then showed them a fucking trailer with, like, barely any fucking gameplay in it. And they thought they were going to change the world. Like, they thought this is the next big thing.
I mean, this was the game that forced out Marty O'Donnell. So I don't know. Maybe you're right.
I have a feeling. You know, I watched that video when they were first Destiny was being talked about, where they redid their office. They made it more of an environment where you could collaborate with each other and walk around with your desk and basically go the Apple-esque route of just social interacting with, you know, Google, the touch of Google in there. They're a game company. They're going too far. Their stomach's too big for their eyes or something. Their eyes are too big for their stomach, I think, when it comes to who they think they are. But they need to get back to doing games.
Good games. We all bought. Well, no, okay, all right. So Thurlton bought the game. It came with his white PS4.
I bought a Glacier White PS4 that just happened to come with Destiny. So I have technically not bought Destiny yet.
Is it Glacier or Glacier?
Glacier.
Glacier.
Glacier is how I say it. I don't know. Duran bought the game because he pre-ordered it like fucking last year or some shit.
I did. I pre-ordered it in December of 2013.
I saw that these two bought the game and then found out it was on sale and just rocked up to my local fucking Target and picked it up.
It was on sale?
Of the three of us. Yeah, it was on sale here in Australia. I was the one who got hooked. It's fucked up. I don't know how this happened.
I was thinking about this and you know, after you mentioned that I had a pre-order since last year, like, you'd have thought I'd have learned with Titanfall.
The whole idea
with Destiny is, like, this is the next game by the Halo guys, not being constrained by Microsoft. Like, they can finally make the game they want to make. And then, like, you think about it, and, like, Respawn, that this is this game made by the Call of Duty guys, not being constrained by
Activision or whatever.
Activision, and they can finally make the game they want to make, and they made Titanfall, and we all played it for like 5 matches.
Don't pre-order games.
I think both these companies are kind of like, you know, a kid who finally is home for the first time and ends up getting in a car wreck because they're not really sure what they're doing, or they get fat because they eat too much. They'll find their way when they get, you know, 30 years old. So maybe they need another couple more years to.
I mean, they'll basically, yeah, like that, go with that analogy. They'll find their way or they'll off themselves. That's not really it. It's going to go.
Jeez.
Well, even otherwise, it's like, it's exactly that. It is the whole thing where you need that oppressive force. You need that the company to say, no, you really need to keep fucking meet these deadlines. You need that these guys to say, no, that's not good enough. You need that opposition to make something good.
It necessarily makes something good, just to make something like, you know, a reliable product in a set amount of time. Otherwise, you're going to end up being Peter Molyneux.
I argue just straight up to make something good. Like, if you look at any developer that has made an excellent game, what they'll usually say is that, usually a collaborative process, like everyone's working out together. But what that does is everyone has their own perspective on the game, and everyone is like constantly fighting the whole way through to make the best thing possible. And then the publishers are there on top of it all, telling them to go, no, fuck off, you have to finish it by here. And that like confluence of things is what gives us stuff like The Last of Us, gives us stuff like Portal 2.
I think a lot of that is really like who that big power is, because I think that,
yeah,
especially with a lot of the reports that are coming out now about like, you know, there being a potential, like, Destiny used to be a different game, all this other stuff about a possible, you know, previous story that was cut.
Yeah.
I think Bungie's biggest problem really was that they went and partnered themselves with the Call of Duty guys. And
yeah.
On the one side, for Cynic's point, I just want to say that there's weird games like Dwarf Fortress that come out of their own from being single person, like, yeah, working in their shed. So those things can't happen on their own.
Yeah, those things can happen.
But what I want to try and focus for Destiny is to, like, let's say the campaign, like, we'll split Destiny into two things, because I know myself and Durin have played one side, and I've sort of messed around with the end game content. And then so Cynic can bring it on with that, with the raid. But first, yeah, I want to talk about, like, what everyone's impressions were with the pre-end game stuff.
Holy shit. So, all right. I had a three-page long, A4-page running document of shit that's wrong with Destiny.
Yeah, like, because that is the weirdest thing with this, is when people first get into it, everyone is just like, what? Like, this is a terrible game. This is a horrible game. Yeah. And yet, everyone's playing it. And no, even you. Like, let's even you, Cynic, you just did some the raid. Crazies.
Yeah, some crazies like me and Brad are playing it. Most people saw the light and fucking dropped that game like hot trash, like it is.
So before you self-confessed crazy start talking about it, Cynic, I want Durin to lay some knowledge on this.
Yeah. Tell us about your experience with Destiny, because you beat the game. On paper, you beat Destiny.
I've not seen credits roll because I did not press the button because...
You unlocked credits.
Hear that song?
You have unlocked the credits section.
Thurbleton threatened to leave the party if I ran the credits. Which, by the way, just real quickly, I want to go back to the pretentiousness of Bungie. Like, that's how far up their own ass they are, is that they hired fucking Paul McCartney to come in and do a song for the game, and then they put it in the credits.
Yep. Hey, you know, if they want to waste money and put it in an area where most people just stop and turn it off when it's done, okay.
Yeah, that's the other thing. They hire Paul McCartney, have him do a song, put his song in the credits, and then make the credits an optional button you have to go press and look at.
But isn't that kind of because the song is supposedly really fucking bad?
I don't know. Maybe.
So when you beat the game, you don't have to sit there through the whole credits at the end?
No, you beat the game, and then you just go back to the
It's because the experience keeps going, man. It doesn't stop at the end.
So before the end credits, what was everyone's, Durin, what was your thoughts of just, you know, the story and the initial gameplay experience?
Okay, well, first off, I guess the story, that's going to be a quick one. I don't know what the fuck happened.
Can I just interject with my notes from the first day of playing Destiny? Because it might be relevant here to this particular point.
Please.
Okay, all right. So this is, I have a running note sheet. So this is like stuff I haven't seen for like 3 weeks. All right, first bullet point in my list, no beards.
There's no beard options at all?
There's no beards at all for any
of
the
0 out of 10.
Races. Yeah. What the fuck? This game sucks. Like, straight up, in terms of character
creation, there are no beards in the future.
Problem.
The Awoken aren't dwarves. They're elves, okay?
That was even in, like, that was actually an article written that where, like, Bungie even addressed it, saying that they will look into possibly adding beard options later.
Fuck,
beard DLC.
Yep.
Wait, but I thought you could take your helmet off.
In the tower, you don't have your helmet, and it's in third person.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and it controls really weird, and because it's made for first person, everyone moves really weird. But yeah, it's speaking of third person, my second note, my robot man blinks. What he's got red laser eyes.
No, maybe. I mean,
okay. You notice that your robot man blinks, but you didn't note that your ghost blinks too?
It's so dumb! Like, why? What is...
I mean, I could see that. Maybe the robot man blinks because it's like a human-like feature that's programmed to make him, like, less creepy.
It doesn't
you know?
Have eyelids.
Like
it doesn't have eyelids.
Like, but it's simulated blinking to make you feel better around him, like, more comfortable.
Yeah,
like,
imagine how creepy it would be if you had a robot...
Who was completely unblinking.
Who just never blinked. It just just dead stare.
Yeah. See?
Fuck that. I want my robot
sci-fi.
It got to the point where I was looking at every single like story or like world building element of Destiny and going, this is complete garbage. Like, one of my points is disjointed as hell. After landing on the last bastion of Earth, you get one cutscene with barely any exposition, and they're then just given visual indicators of merchants to buy stuff from. This game doesn't even tell you why you want to do that. Or like buy stuff, well, or do things. Okay. Help
that last
the world.
That last bit. This game doesn't tell you why you want to. That's literally a thread through the entire game. The game never tells you why you want to do anything you're doing.
But Turin, you can read the story and interact with it if you just simply go to Bungie.net and read the Grimoire card section. There's a whole like wealth of knowledge there that you can read about. And why isn't that in the game?
It's
because Activision.
Verbatim, my point is, seriously, you're revived from the dead after being gone for hundreds of years, and the main character doesn't even ask why any fucking questions about the shattered fucking world he returns to. He doesn't even feel the need to reconcile the fact that everyone he's ever known is dead, or wonder why a little robot came out of nowhere and brought him back to life.
Clearly, you've never played an MMO.
There's a lot wrong with Destiny, and you're right. Like, the first thing you realize when you're playing Destiny is you have no fucking idea why anything's happening while you're doing it. You're just going there.
Like, I was watching the cutscenes and listening to the dialogue and everything for the first bit of the game, and like I would listen to what the ghost was saying on the way to a planet for a mission, and I would listen to the cutscenes, and I literally, I still had no idea what was going on. By halfway through the game, we would talk through cutscenes and I had my headset on. I couldn't hardly hear the game anymore. I could hear my gunshots. That's about it. And it didn't matter because I just know I need to run towards that indicator and hit X.
Uh huh. Square, man. You hold
square.
Sounds
like an MMO to me.
Sorry.
Hold square. No, because an MMO. Okay, I haven't played an MMO which has had a less contiguous story than this game.
No, it absolutely has. Not. This is
the most bare bones.
Oh, okay, I don't know. Is Phantasy Star Online considered an MMO? Like the first one?
I don't know.
Because I played that on the GameCube, and I played a lot of it, and I don't remember anything about the story. I just remember there was a big, big evil guy named like Darkness Falls or something, which I thought was hilarious because that was around the time the movie came out.
I would take the Guild Wars 2 fucking cutscenes. With people talking on opposite sides of the screens and barely anything actually being said, and then you getting like really like lame, not really meaningful choices over this.
Oh yeah,
that's like a head and shoulders like next gen storytelling compared to
Guild Wars 2.
Never bothered me. In Guild Wars 2. that was never an issue for me. So I'm trying to compare that.
I hate it. It's weird because like I just watched the. Metal Gear Scanlan like bonus episode where they watched a trailer.
The 7-minute trailer?
Yeah, the 27-minute trailer of MGS2 and realized that is way more compelling than anything you play while playing the first 15 hours, maybe 10 hours, depending on how long.
So going back to pre-ending thoughts, we've pretty much beaten the dead horse on the story. It's bad. but the reason why I kept coming back to it, and I still plan on going back and playing more of it, is that as bad as the story in that game is, the gameplay is fun.
So good! I haven't played a console shooter in a while. Aside from the PvP. Yeah, the PvP
is fucking broken.
I think Universe is qualified
enough. I feel like it sucks because I feel like that's where the game at least had some potential for like long-term play.
Mm.
But, the way they handled it with like allowing players to bring in their gear and everything, like I understand, like they tried to balance it by making everyone's levels the same or not matter, but it doesn't matter when somebody just straight up has better gear. Like my first experience in the PvP was I went into a match against a bunch of level 20s that had way better and more weapons than I did, and I just would get one shot by them. So,
to put in perspective, the first time I went to PvP, which is one of the last times I went to PvP, I went in and my character hadn't even unlocked the ability to use heavy weapons, and everyone else had.
Same.
And yeah. You just get fucking wrecked. It's sad.
So yeah, that's kind of my thoughts on the game. Like I beat the game, but I didn't go do any of the raid shit or anything. I would like to go back to it and play a bit more, at least get up to 20 and start looking at the how the light grind works and how grindy it really is. But I don't know, any of the game that has, like, there's a reason I stopped playing Wildstar. Like, any game that has a grind at the end game, I'm done with.
And depends. What do you call a grind? Like, just killing dudes or
just doing the same shit over and over and over again?
Oh yeah.
Well, I don't know. Okay, I say that, but like that's basically end game. Wow. Even
yeah, minus, I find the term grind to be kind of interesting because a lot of times people will use it in a way that, like, what is the difference between grinding in a game and playing a game? Like, when does playing a game become grinding, and when does grinding become having fun playing a game?
I guess my biggest thing, really, when it comes to in-game stuff that I dislike, that a lot of MMOs are bad about doing these days, is when the in-game grind is basically daily quests.
Yeah, dailies are atrocious as someone who played.
Right, which is why I like the in-game WoW stuff, is because that's an option. But if I want to, I could just spend like the whole time just running dungeons and getting gear and just have fun doing that, and I'm content doing that. That said,
until you need to get repair money to repair your armor between raids, and then you have to start doing dailies every day to build it repair money.
That is something that I think Destiny, like, to their credit, is they didn't fall into that MMO trait of like when you die, nothing bad happens, other than like if the whole team dies, you'll have to reset on like a darkness zone, but whatever. And then, like, you don't lose experience or you don't get damaged gear. And, yeah, like, not having to repair stuff. That's two things that are, like, nice going, because that is a tough trope. But what I'm curious what you guys think of, because there's – you could either be doing the dailies and slowly accruing marks to, like, buy gear. Or you can, like, go to a loot cave and just try and get gear via, like,
random loot number cave. Generation. I remember that.
And it's
kind of grind.
It's kind of strange that, like, Bungie has, like, tried stamping out that approach, even though people are still going to do it. But what they, like, do, it's kind of confusing, and I don't know, like, maybe you guys can tell me if another MMO has done something like this. Like, WoW and whatnot has sort of in practice with item levels, but level 20, while being the highest level you can get via experience, is not the highest level. Level 30 is the highest level, and that is acquired by gear.
And I think that's a crazily interesting system.
It's interesting. I don't like it.
Wildstar.
I don't know if it's good.
No, not Wildstar. Elder Scrolls Online did the same thing. You hit the max level, and then you start working on your veteran ranks after that. So it's a very similar concept.
Yeah. Do you get veteran ranks through gear?
No, actually, the way they do theirs is they're basically just more levels. They're just harder to get. Like, the grind for the level is even longer than a normal level would be. Some shit. It's real bad.
Yeah. Here it's all right. So the early Destiny, and I haven't necessarily been convinced otherwise yet. So probably current Destiny has. Right, remember when Diablo 3 came out and everyone complained about the itemization? This has way. I'd vastly prefer that itemization problem to this. It's a game where for the first two weeks of its release, it was almost impossible to get good gear for the end game, to the point where people hit level 20 or level 18. Like, Durin hit level 18 to 20, finishing the game. He finished the fucking game and hadn't seen a legendary, right? You hadn't even seen a single legendary?
I haven't seen anything above a blue.
More so than that, like, it's a very simple design. Like, there's only four types of primary guns. There's only three types of secondary guns, which that is another big issue. Some people, like, I would love to just run around with just a shotgun or just a fusion rifle.
Yeah.
But those aren't primary guns, and like now there are like legendary and exotic weapons that mimic fusion rifles. So they know there's a demand for them, but they still don't want to actually do it.
It seems like a game of compromises in a lot of ways.
Yeah, like it's kind of. Yeah. I think they described it. Was it them? Yeah, they described it as like it's their Assassin's Creed 1.
Yeah.
Which I think is an apt comparison because
Assassin's Creed was definitely the game I had to go to when something has an interesting concept but poor execution. Yeah. Like Mirror's Edge. Game, Mirror's Edge 1 is an Assassin's Creed 1 game.
Yeah. Like, after playing that game, like, I you know, I have my issues with it, and I'm not sure how long I'll stick with it in the long run, but I am super interested in what they do with another one.
Oh, yeah. I'm... Can we get to... So we talked about finishing the game and that kind of stuff. Can we get to my side
of
the house?
Yeah, I think we can pretty much cap Destiny, apart from what Cynic's going to add with the raid, as Destiny isn't good, but it's good enough.
Right. So, yeah, okay. So, I describe Destiny as the best bad game I've ever played. So let's just put that out first before us. Because, yeah. It's got amazing gameplay, but everything else about it has significant flaws, to the point where I actually don't think it's a good game at all. But for some reason, it grabbed me, and the reason it grabbed me is probably gameplay. And essentially, there's two things to the end game of Destiny. End game Destiny is buying gear through raw fucking farming and effort to get the things you need to buy gear, and you generally need 2 weeks to buy gear, which is fucking terrible in terms of a design decision. Like, the fact that you have to, like, do shit, like, run around patrol missions, finishing public events to get 4 marks when gear costs 65 marks. And so you're generally looking at, like, 12 to 15 marks an hour. So you're looking at spending, like, 10 hours a week to get enough marks to max out the weekly marks and buy some gear. It's shit. Like, the way to get gear is shit. Getting to level 27, 28 is easy, but a long-haul grind that's really annoying and fucking shit. But then you get there. All right. So let's put that aside. I'm happy to say that's just terrible. But when you can finally start doing Nightfalls and the raid, the game changes, which is a terrible thing to say. Like, it's just fucking dumb. The best part of that game is the very end. So everyone knows about, like, Halo, and Halo shit is that playing in heroic and higher is how you actually play that game. That's the fun to be found. This is the same thing with Destiny. Like, you're looking at playing Nightfall difficulty, which is, like, has a bunch of skulls enabled. So essentially enemies do high melee damage. Particular damage types like arc or warp or solar are amplified 3 times. So you're taking shitloads of damage from the enemy and dealing shitloads of damage to the enemy. So everything becomes more frenetic. Just like crazy shit. Like, you don't get ammo for the weapon you're currently wielding. Like, there's all these interesting gameplay modifiers stacked on top of the game, and the enemies are more tough, and the AI is improved, and there's more of them.
Like, the AI, like, it's a lot of those things are one of my, like, were my core complaints with Destiny when I was playing it pre 20. And, like, I've seen a glimpse of that, which is, like, been an enjoying factor when doing the tougher stuff. With you and with Ballard, aka Jab of the World, and a few other things. Yep. But it's just like, there are effectively 4 worlds. One of the worlds is a moon, so in real sense, there's only 3 worlds, but in video game sense, there's 4. And, like, the first world, like, on Earth, the AI is really bad. And, like, it's...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it gets better and better, but then once you start getting into this post-20 content, it, like you're saying with the skulls and
it
all
flips.
That... It gets to be an actually compelling and engaging, like, gameplay.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's like, why would you hide your best gameplay and game behind 20 to 30 hours of gearing up after the 6 to 10 hour main storyline?
Well, and more so, like, after the story is over and after effectively the credits roll. I mean, they're unlocked, but still, it's a weird thing. Like, I don't think they did enough job to, like, tease it. When people were playing it, like, the favorite thing was that sword mission, the Sword of Crota, where you had this whole different experience. And you'd think they would throw in some skulls along the way to, like, make it interesting.
Yeah, but, like, you can always enable the heroic skull, which is the basic thing of selecting a mission and then picking the harder version of the mission, which is how we played this game, because we all played.
Yeah, but that always felt together. Like it was just adding more dudes.
Yeah, it adds more dudes and it makes some yellows appear. It's only when you get to literally level 28 content, so 8 levels past the highest level of the game.
To explain what yellows are, it just makes them more bullet spongy, amazingly the same color as a traditional sponge.
Which is actually a sponge color.
Like, that idea is actually one of the biggest problems I have with, like, the late game
Destiny mm-hmm. stuff, and why I don't think I'm going to really go through with like getting the raid stuff and working on all that stuff. Cause like I was hoping they would have some like really interesting way of handling like boss fights in MMO shooter kind of thing. And it's literally, it's worse than,
Borderlands. It's really good. It's really good. I'll get there.
Well, yeah, Bullet Cynic's biggest piece on the raid, cause he actually just completed it. But like if they had stuff instead of Bullet Spongy to be like, everyone's throwing grenades at you, or they're just like, you know, it's twice as fast, or it's like they're just some way of the traditional Halo skull setup other than just Bullet Sponge.
And you So the only skull you have access to for most of the game is just the Bullet Sponge skull. And only when you get to the end do you get things like enemies do triple damage, which makes the shitty AI not feel shitty anymore, because they just have to like look at you for a second and shoot maybe one to two bullets for you to go from max health to like near nothing. It is... The fact that they have bad AI is the equalizing factor when you get to end game. It's actually really, really, it works out really well. It's legitimately fun. The problem, all right, so that's Nightfalls, and they're awesome. And then you have the raid. Before I get to the raid, I'll tell you the problem with both of these things. The problem with these things is you only get rewards for either of them once a week. So essentially, the Nightfall, which I would love to play end on end continuously, I would love to play more and more Nightfall missions. It's only one mission a week, and you only get rewards for it once a week. And there's no matchmaking. So we have to use fucking DestinyLFG.net to find people to play with, which is the fucking problem.
Wait, like DestinyLFG.net? That sounds just like a website that someone made up. That sounds like something... That sounds similar to GW2LFG.com.
It's exactly the same goddamn thing.
Which was a community-made looking-for-group system because the internet didn't make a looking-for-group system. Which
I think about the time that thing launched was about the time I fell off Guild Wars, so this kind of lines up for me.
It's so dumb because normal content has matchmaking, but for some reason the best content in the game doesn't, even though what you're essentially doing is finding randoms on the internet, just like you would if there was actual normal matchmaking.
I was going to say, it's probably because Bungie felt like it was too difficult of content for you to play with randoms, so you have
to... We are playing with randoms. Exactly.
It's because Bungie wanted to make this, like, they wanted you to do these things with your friends, whereas one of the big attractions of MMOs is, like, you meet other people. It's a social thing. And also, like, To be the devil's advocate of myself with the skull conversation we had a little bit ago, if it wasn't as bullet spongy, I don't know if it would be as socially engaging to, like, you know, like Brad Shoemaker would always say in the Bombcast, of just like he gets on with a couple other people and they're not even paying attention to the game they're playing. Right. They're just chatting.
And that's awesome for the daily, I hate saying this, the daily epic, sorry,
the daily grind
story, daily heroic story. And the daily bounties, that's what you do that for. But when you're playing Nightfall and the raid, you need to actually coordinate. And so this is the problem, because I don't play that with you guys. Like, you guys are my online friends. I don't play it with you guys. I play with randoms I've met on fucking Destiny, LFG.net. And they're fucking cool. Or in the Lincoln Force Destiny group. But they're really cool. So the whole reasoning behind not having matchmaking for these high-end stuff is entirely...
I actually do have a question regarding the Nightfall stuff and everything, because I'm trying to remember if I'm recalling this correctly, but in that stuff, is there voice chat or is there no voice chat?
There's always in-game voice chat, as long as you're in a party together.
Okay, so because there were places where there wasn't. I guess that's probably the matchmaking stuff and the PvP, because they were looking in ways to add voice chat to those areas later.
When you actually form a fire team.
There is a Nightfall and Raid.
When there's a pre-made fire team, that's when you have voice chat.
Exactly. Okay. And you have to be in a fire team to go in together for the raid and Nightfall. Stuff like we had these things where it got so hard with the Nightfall stuff. And of the two, I actually prefer Nightfall. So I might talk a little bit more about that. But it got so hard that you have to find, it's like Dark Souls. It's like fucking co-op Dark Souls in the best way possible, because you have to find a way to cheese the shit out of most of the bosses in order to beat them at all. Like, we have things where in the Nightfall, there is this ledge where you like enter the boss arena and then you have to drop down off the ledge to get to the actual arena itself with the boss all the way far below. But if you go down there, there's like so many fucking ads that are all bullet sponges and all doing triple damage to you that you will just absolutely fucking wasted within seconds of going down there. So we were like, hey, why don't we just stay up top of the ledge? That's obviously the way to do this. You stay up top of the ledge and then they spawn this like really, that's essentially a super ad behind you every like minute. And he just rushes you and tries to push you off the ledge again. So what the team did essentially is we had two people standing on the ledge firing down the boss. With the third person, he has to aggro the super ad, take him outside and just like fucking jump around and shit and just try to just avoid all forms of damage because he two-shot you or one-shot you if you get into melee range and just like dance around him for ages and ages and ages. And we tried that for like an hour and we got the boss down to half health. And then we like went, okay, that's not working because the guy who gets tries to take aggro loses aggro eventually because he gets to, like he'll get hit once and then he has to run away and then he'll lose aggro. So we had this thing where all three of us would turn around, take out the super ad within like 3 to 8 seconds because if he lasts any longer, he'll corner us and kill us all. Then go back to the boss and fire at him for like 50 seconds, then go back to the super ad. And that rotation happened because we tried so many permutations of the fight that we found that that was the most efficient way of doing it. That was 1 week. Another week was a similar concept where there's a room that leads into the boss arena, but in that room, a super ad would spawn, but also like all these additional ads would spawn and you just get absolutely fucking party wiped. But what we found was if you go even further back away from the boss arena, there's a safe zone that the ads wouldn't come to. So you spend like 8 seconds firing at the boss, run the fuck away. All the ads are spawned. They like patrol the area for a bit and then go away. Then you run out for 8 seconds, fire at the boss, then run away. But the problem is the boss does triple damage, void damage. So if he looks at you, you die. So we have points where like two people would be dead. One person would be in the safe zone. He has to run out, like pop a bubble shield, res two dudes, run away. And yeah, just cool shit happens in the Nightfall. The problem is it's only one mission a week and you only get rewards for it once a week. I would love to do that all the time. It is like the best content in Destiny, except for the raid. So that's Nightfall side. I'll stop talking about that. The raid itself is entirely different. And that's when it comes to Durin's questioning whether it's like there's actually interesting boss mechanics. And I can say definitively yes, there's actually.
Well, no, it's not a question like whether there's interesting boss mechanics. I've heard that there are. The problem, I guess, it's really an issue with the game entirely, like not even just really bosses, but it's most noticeable in boss fights, even just through the story, where it's the same problem I had with Borderlands, where like with these RPG shooters, their way of making the game, like, I guess, interesting or, you know, not having to try and put, you know, 2,000 guys on the screen at once just to make it difficult is to make all the enemies bullet sponges. I mean, like you guys are talking about, the yellow guys, that's literally what they are, is they're just bullet sponge guys.
Yeah.
And that is just, I don't know, for me, like, for a shooter, that's just not fun gameplay, and I guess one of my biggest problems with it is the fact that, like, none of it makes any logical sense. Like, why do I have to unload two clips into this one guy just to kill him?
Well, and it's also, like, the pre-20 experience, like, the final boss fight of the story mission is three phases of bullet sponge dudes.
Oh god.
Of the same bullet sponge dude. The same dude
that you final boss fight?
Yeah.
Yeah, the same
bullet sponge dude. I don't, was that you, Thurb, that mentioned it, or was it somewhere else I heard it, where it was compared to the final boss of Borderlands, which was a pretty apt comparison also?
I have not. I've beaten Borderlands 1. I haven't beaten Borderlands 2.
Yeah, Borderlands 1 is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it didn't even have weak points.
The final boss fight of Destiny was better than the final boss fight of Borderlands, only because I'd hide behind a rock and shoot one weak spot for 10 minutes.
Yeah, I was not impressed with the final boss in Borderlands.
In Destiny, you can at least move.
Yeah, so that's the problem with the main game is that like it's as if they only had one good like three good ideas for bosses. Maybe four.
They have more content planned for the rest of the year, but it's just in the current package and free DLC they provided with the raid, they're only so like they are teasing in piecemeal the stuff.
Yeah. And so to give you an idea of like some of the interesting stuff that happens in the raid, there's things called oracles, which are these floating balls of light that essentially unlock the ability to damage the boss. So essentially you have your team of six that go in, there's shitloads of ads spawning. And then you all have to coordinate to take out these oracles. So everyone's like calling back right, and everyone like turns to the back right and tries to shoot that, or like runs around pillars to get there in time to be able to shoot it. And So that Oracle is continually spawning around the area. This is like the mid-boss fight, so I'm not spoiling anything massive here. So the Oracles are currently spawning around. Everyone's trying to take them out as possible while dealing with the ads. And when all the Oracles are taken down, a relic spawns. And that relic can, if you hit the boss with it, bring down his shields and allow you to damage it. But then you have like this weird, interesting thing where if you don't kill an Oracle in time, everyone wipes. But the boss is usually weak at around that point, and then you have to like juggle adds, killing Oracles, defeating the boss at the same time, bringing down his shield, stopping him from teleporting to keep his shields down. Like everyone doing an interesting, their own thing in concert with each other to take down one boss. And that's just the mid boss fight, not even the final boss fight, which has like everyone like splitting into teams and like going to different worlds and like going through portals and enabling portals and disabling portals and like dealing with ads again and firing. It's just, they do all this interesting shit, but it's only in the raid. And it's 6-player content, which makes it even better, but you have to find 6 people, which means you have to do, you're sitting there for like literally an hour looking for more people at destinylg.net. It's just, yeah, it's, that game is, has really great shit in there. It's just a bad game and that doesn't use me.
Sounds like a blast.
I love it. I love it. That's because I'm level 28, can do this like end game shit. If I wouldn't do the grind to 28 again.
So is there any, like, is that pretty much your final thoughts on Destiny? Is that like you're really enjoying it, but it's not like you wouldn't do it again? You wouldn't I'm do really it again, or it, yeah. looking back, would you still have done it?
Yes, because only because some of the stuff I've done in this game is different to anything else. Like that's why we play video games, right? You play video games to do stuff that's different than anything you've done before.
Sure.
Okay, unless you're playing an MMO unless player, in which case you play video games like MMOs, and then you just essentially
unless you're chasing that unicorn that is the next WoW.
It doesn't even exist anymore. It's impossible to make such a thing.
Uh-huh. That wasn't going to be the next WoW. That was going to be the next Destiny.
Oh, man. Yeah. No. So there is shit I've done in this game that has been, again, it's like fucking multiplayer Dark Souls. Like anything that you can describe to me that fits the definition of multiplayer Dark Souls, I'm there. And some of this game is like that, which is awesome. And so, I don't regret it.
So Mage Knight, You've played a fair amount of Shadow of Mordor.
I have.
Good games!
I've seen 30 hours, but I'm not sure if that's true or not.
Are the boss fights more or less the same thing of just run into a guy and stab him, or are they interesting and divergent enough that is counter to my comparison of the bosses of Destiny?
I've only done one boss fight so far, the first boss fight in the game, but it's mostly run and stab. There's some different mechanics. They have different movesets than anyone else in the game. So at least the one I fought, like you had to actually do some dodges and stuff that was different.
Can you just give like a brief setup of what Destiny is, or not Destiny, Shadow of Mordor is? And like, I thought the captains were the, like, were there, I guess they're mini bosses.
I was actually going to ask, like, what is a boss?
So boss. So it sets up the start of the game. So this game is Lord of the Rings game set in the land of Mordor, which you may remember from like the end of the series, like the volcano and the, it's not all like gray ash, but it's starting to become that way as Sauron comes back. And you were playing as a dude who is going to take vengeance on these orcs for killing his family. That's the basic setup. And what you're doing is you're going out into this world and you're looking at this orc power structure and you're killing dudes. And eventually you get the ability to sort of warp them to your will. And, so the captains themselves are not bosses per se. They are like the regular mooks, but they are a little bit more powerful. They have special traits that are randomized. So like it might be immune to ranged attacks, or it might get afraid if you could catches on fire. If they get afraid, they'll run away. They have their own power ratings, which kind of go up as stuff happens in the world. So like if they're at a feast and they live through the feast, then they gain power. If they go to a trial and they like succeed at the trial and they'll gain power, they'll fight each other. If one loses, he'll die and the other one will gain power.
So how do you find out all these various powers? Or do you just like as soon as you walk up?
What you do
to
is you there's these guys in the world called worms, and they just are random orcs who know more about the captains than anyone else. And if you grab them and interrogate them, then they tell you about the weaknesses of the captains or the war chiefs. War chiefs being like the what the captains eventually ascend to. They like there's 5 war chiefs that sort of overlook the like 20 or 30 or so, or captains there are. I forget exactly how many there are.
And the war chiefs are the bosses?
No. War chiefs are just really, really strong captains, basically. The bosses are the sort of like shadowy cabal of Sauron's like advisors that are set up at the start of the game.
Yeah, is this game set in 1989?
No, it's not. It's set in the Third Age, 1650 something.
Oh, I'm sorry, Third, but Shadow of Mordor is not Firewatch.
Okay, I just want to know.
If it was secretly Firewatch, that would be pretty cool, but I don't think.
Though you haven't finished it yet, so it could secretly be
Firewatch. I guess I haven't finished it yet. You're right. So it could be. It could still be like Firewatch, the prequel to Firewatch. So they're like plot dudes who are the actual bosses, it would seem. At least the first dude I thought was like an actual like plot guy. The war chiefs and the captains, you'll just run into in the world. Like you'll just, if you're not like really paying attention to where they are versus where you are, you'll randomly run into them. Like they'll show up in fights with like, "Hey, you," or like in my case, I'll be stealth killing dudes and I'll go to stab a guy and he won't die because he's a captain, and most captains don't die in one hit stealth. Like, oh crap, so I got to fight this captain now.
Nice.
Yeah. So
it's weird because the nemesis system, which is essentially what you've described it like,
nemesis system.
Yeah, which is going to be a thing. Like that's going to be one of the things like fucking cover shooting in this generation.
I don't think so.
Swear.
I read an interview with one of the guys that was developing the game, and the way he described what they had to do to get that system working the way it needs to work. I feel like the nemesis system is actually more like this is the next L.A. Noire video capture thing, where like it's a really cool thing in this game, and like makes this game what it is, and we will fucking never see it again.
I don't think so. I think it's too good of an idea that fits in an RPG.
No, it's a great idea. It's the amount of work that has to go into doing this.
The nemesis system is endemic of a larger trend in video games, which is that procedural generation and player-created narratives are way more impressive and something to aim for than any sort of scripted narrative. So that's why, I mean, like, you see stuff like No Man's Sky. Like, finally have the technology where sort of any system can generate these massive interconnected universes. And you need to, like even Minecraft is another, like, part of this, like, player-created narrative, like someone saying, "Hey, I found this place last night. It was incredible. It was like I watched the sunrise from on top of it. It was beautiful." Like you get these things, like, "Oh, I there's this orc and he was crazy and we chased each other for like an hour," and then like these stories are what's really coming out of Shadow of Mordor, and I think that's what's kind of hooking a lot of people into it, is like this sort of way that like nothing is really scripted except for like a couple of story missions. Like everything in it is happening because of the game's mechanics interacting with each other and you interacting with the game's mechanics.
Right.
Yeah. So that's where the strength of the game is.
I don't think the nemesis system, like I said, because of the way that developer described the sheer amount of work and effort that has to go into this. And like the person interviewing them was talking about, like, well, you know, now that you have the foundation here, you know, can we expect to see, you know, it, you know, it's going to be easier for you to use this in like a future game or something. And they were like, no, like you basically have to build it from the ground up every time to get it.
I don't think this system exactly is going to be replicated in places.
But what what I think the system did do, though, is the system kind of proved to a lot of other developers that, like, that idea of that emergent gameplay and the procedural generation can work very well in a narrative-driven, big AAA game.
That's a good point. Yeah, some people aren't liking the story so much. I like the story a lot. I think the characters in it are well,
fairly well written. That turns into my question. Okay,
so you're 30 hours in. Do they at some point explain that fucking intro? Aim to be there exactly.
I kind of want to just point out while we're in the middle of this discussion, Nemesis system is not on previous generation consoles. 360.
Yes, it's only on the next gen consoles.
Exactly. This is my question.
An absurd amount of memory.
So I have a question. Who created the Nemesis system? Because I'm hearing this, and they reference Batman. I think Warner Brothers did. Okay,
it's Monolith that developed this, right?
Monolith. Yeah.
This is original. This is original, which is
This is created for this game.
So Nemesis system is not based on like the people you fight, but it's like it's almost like an engine for the world's interaction and characters and how things work.
Yes. I mean, like anyone. That's a cool thing. So I didn't mention this earlier, but any regular mook who kills you will become a captain when he kills you and get a name and a special name and a special set of traits, and any captain who kills you will get promoted up the ranks. So, like, just anyone in the world has potential of being a war chief, like a big bad character that you've like learned to hate and track and manipulate. Like, it, any every character in the game has the potential to do that, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Think about it this way, right?
What?
Like, we just played, like, think of any game you've played recently. Most of the times you play a game, every enemy you fight is essentially this fucking same. Like, in some cases, there's only three character models for enemies. Like, I'm thinking of Rise, Son of Rome here. And for the whole fucking game, like, you only have three character models. But in this, there's 40. I think it was, 36 to 40, like, some huge number.
Yeah, I barely noticed any repetition. Like, each one,
yeah.
I know in my mind they're not unique, but they feel unique, each one.
Exactly.
Like, there's so many of them. There's some stuff that's repeated.
One of the things they do to where they like to kind of add variety to the characters too is when Major Knight mentioned like that, you know, any mook can kill you and become a captain. Mm-hmm. Like, as they move up their ranks, they also will change their armor. They'll get better and better armor. Also, as you kill guys or harm guys, they'll actually like that'll be reflected on their character model. Like, they might have an eye patch the next time.
Yeah, they'll have an eye patch, or they'll get burned. And they'll
so not only are there 40 individual enemies that can all be like different variations of themselves, each one of them has a full like fucking voice acting attribute to them. They have a personality to them. And they have this full progression planned out with like some. Yeah. I'd assume that all of them have like pre-written statistics of what
they're. It seems like they're sort of using archetype systems. Like, I ran into a guy who had like the sub name like the crazy or something, and he like was bumbling to himself. And like, there's the guys that like there's like the gluttonous, so he'll talk about like food and being hungry and stuff like stuff like that.
But at the same time, there I've also heard that there are that if certain things will happen. Like a guy that you maybe defeated in the past might come back again.
Yes.
And his subname will actually change. And kind of reflected with that, his strengths and weaknesses also change based on how you fought him the last time.
I don't know anything about that. I don't think so. The guy who came back for me several times had the same strengths and the same name the whole time.
Well, it's not every time. It can be determined by the circumstances of the encounter.
I don't know anything about that, but it's possible.
I mean, it is also, like, being a procedural thing, there's only so much in there that they have put in there, too. Like, there's only so many pieces that will rotate through.
There's a limit to it.
Yeah,
I think it's wide enough that I didn't really notice too much repetition. It didn't really break the illusion for me, which I thought was pretty impressive.
Yeah, so what part of the Nemesis system is actually the compelling part? Is it the part where you have these really cool enemies that evolve and change over time and then have like strengths and weaknesses at the end? Or is it the fact that anyone can become this enemy that you'll fear?
I mean, it's mostly that. I mean, they're both like, there's no, like, you can't leave. I can't pick out one part of the system. Like, the system works because it's a whole bunch of different stuff working together in unison that makes it so impressive. I think, I mean, like, it's mostly the former. It's mostly to like that there's these unique enemies that sort of evolve and change. And they get later on, they'll get relationships. So war chiefs will have bodyguards of elite captains.
Right.
You have to manipulate those relationships to sort of like create power struggles and use
and
that.
You say that and because like, I think that the part that part, which is like enemies that progress and change over time and develop relationships to each other, that can be replicated. I think the massive part of why this is so hard to do is because any enemy can have that path. But you can't. I can think of a game where there's like 30 to 40 enemies, all which are unique and have a progression to them, and they. Depends which of them you kill at any given time as to who's left at the end. That would be an interesting game in itself. Like I can see parts of the system that will live on, just not this system. You're probably right that this system itself is very hard to replicate.
It's two things. One, I'd like to think that if, and it looks like this game is going to be a good hit, we'll check with John Green or Jeff Green to see if it is if it's a hit. But then it will like promote the idea of making like this type of experience, not necessarily the same engine, but just like the like one more step towards a procedural generated game from a big company. Which I mean, we're going to see stuff like what's the new zombie game? Isn't that procedural?
Not Dying Light. That's not
the MMO looking one.
You mean
Daisy? Like,
oh no! I know which one he's talking about.
I'll remember it later. But
You mean Undying? No.
I will look at there's people like listening who are just screaming it right now. The other side I was going to say that we haven't talked about yet is the whole like you play as a ranger, but also as like a wraith of some kind.
Yeah, so you get inhabited by this spirit.
Yeah,
And that's what most of the main plot is about, right?
Yes, yeah, the whole plot is about him dealing with this situation, and also like avenging his family. Like, vengeance is a big part of the theme of the game.
But you can mind control and sort of like, you know, it brand and take over certain orcs, and you can sort of in end game, you can play a role in the Nemesis system and sort of implant your own troops in the orc hierarchy. And if you like have mind controlled a captain when you're fighting the war chief, you can then like Manchurian candidate switch that captain to your side, and not only that captain, but all the orcs under his command as well. And I've heard that is like a really big thing come like the final battles and whatnot. And so that is another neat like part of the system of like you're actually interacting with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the end game half of it, and it sounds so cool to put like the fact even though it's like a basic concept, like the idea of having a sleeper agent in an enemy's army and then coming up to engage him in a fight and then fucking turning the sleeper agent and suddenly so you have dude in the insides and you have people to fight alongside. It's just so fucking cool.
The bodyguard's just so strong that if you have enough of them surrounding a war chief, like you can just turn them on and then watch as they just destroy the war chief. Like I think that's interactive times. Yeah.
That's so cool. So it leads back to my first question, which I never got to vocalize. Considering the fact that the Nemesis system requires so much RAM, et cetera, it's exclusive to the next gen consoles, which means the current gen consoles, last gen consoles don't have it, which means that only the open world game and the base plot. Is the base plot of this game any good? Is it compelling?
I think it depends on who you ask. Games and people who have been pretty unhappy with it. I personally think it's enough to keep my interest going through it. There's not a ton of story. There's 20 story missions.
There's not a lot of great things coming out necessarily like for the 360 and PS3 in terms of like big open world games. And as an open world game, I think it probably stands on its own feet. So it's a decent game. I wouldn't say that I would recommend it to somebody as, you know, you should go in and get the PS3 or 360 version of this game that I'm playing. It's great. Mm-hmm. I would say hold off until if you're gonna get a PS4 or Xbox One anytime in the next year or so.
If you can run it on your PC.
The PC version is good.
By the way, the zombie game H1Z1.
H1Z1.
I don't know if that's procedural, but that is like they are going for like armor sized worlds.
That name is almost unmemorable. I can't. You just said it, and I already forgot it.
It's supposed to be play off the swine flu H1N1, but it's H1Z1.
It's like Scream Coaster or whatever the fuck that game Chat of the World is working on.
Fork. I mean, the thing Scream? Is, though, Cynic, like it's okay because you're not the only one that's going to have forgotten about it. It's a game made by Sony Online Entertainment, which means that like within a year of its launch,
hey, Planetside 2 is there, right?
Yeah, they're like as much as people like the mainstream bashes Planet like Sony Online Entertainment, there's a reason why they're not going out of business because they
release a new MMO every 9 months.
Well, yes, but also there's still enough people playing their previous MMOs, and they don't try and bite off more than they can chew. It's like it is the EVE Online thing of like they aren't going to try scaling up and making Elite Dangerous or something. They're going to stick to making EVE Online and not piss off their current group too much. Their current
community. Sure, yeah, I'm just a bit bitter with them because they ruined DC Universe Online. That's all.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Shadow was good at one point.
They ruined DC Universe Online because Sony Online Entertainment were the ones. I'm sorry. I'll back that up. They did not ruin it. DC ruined it.
Okay.
Never mind.
Shadow of Mordor.
Shadow of Mordor.
I'm wondering if this game will hold up to how much the Nemesis system will carry this game when compared to things like The Witcher 3 next year.
Yeah, I think The Witcher 3 is going to be perfectly fine with its systems on its own.
I'll definitely probably try out Witcher 3, but I am not enjoying, but still playing Shadow of Mordor. But those like that has to do with not liking the Batman style combat and just like the general. Really?
I love the combat, by the way.
Oh yeah, like, combat's great.
I feel like I prefer a god every time I do something. It's so great.
I prefer other kinds of combat. Like I didn't enjoy Assassin's Creed it falls into the it's good enough. I mean, like it's.
I think it's way better than Assassin's Creed combat.
I'm with Majan on that. I think people who prefer the Assassin's Creed style over the Batman are crazy, but
opinions.
No, it's just the evolution of it. Like, Assassin's Creed was first. I enjoyed that, but I didn't think it was the best. And then when Batman, like, that became the new best, but still, it's just, it's very easy to not die in that. In that I just have to keep pressing Y at the right time.
That's true. I find that I'm dying a lot in Shadow of Mordor, though. Like, it's easy to get overwhelmed. They throw in more guys.
Where they fix the Batman thing is that, like yes, you just hit the Y button at the right time, but when an enemy does hit you and they take out, like, a quarter of your health, like, you...
Yeah, some of the guys hit pretty hard. They add in more guys, so there's guys that require to use the dodge a lot more. So there's, like, spear dudes where they have a big shield and a spear and they'll poke at you and swipe, and you have to really think about where they are in relation to you and make sure you hit that A, like, the, or whatever your button for dodge is, like, and you can't, like, I'm so used to an encounter that a lot of times I'll miss the dodge. Another times they have both archers and spear throwers. They'll do tons of damage, and you have no prompt, or, like, don't really, like, they show a little icon on screen when they're taking aim at you, but it's really hard to know, like, when they're actually hitting you, and you'll take a ton of damage from them if you don't, like, kind of get out of the fight and take them out before you go back to the melee.
I've put a few hours into it, so, and, like, I've come across the spear guys where really I just, like, run straight at them and stab them.
Yeah. And then there's berserkers, where if you hit them, they will grab you and throw you back, and you have to stun them first, which can be kind of hard in a big melee.
Mm. Well, there's also there are times where there's enough guys that, like, there will be two of them that you have to counter kind of at the same time, like, quickly tap the button both times. Otherwise, if you like, counter one guy,
that's an ability you get later. You have to double counter, which is pretty crazy.
What's up, Cynic?
Well, everyone's playing this with, like, a gamepad, right? Like,
yes, I didn't even try keyboard and mouse.
It is the same issue I have with Sleeping Dogs. Of I'm playing with a controller, and I love everything about the controller, except when it comes to having to aim with a bow.
I had a lot of trouble with.
With Sleeping Dogs, you don't get a bow in that game, but it's when you have to aim with a gun. Like, really, I think GTA 3 is the only game I'm okay with, like... Like an aiming.
Pretty generous with the slowdown in Shadow Mordor. You can upgrade it so the slowdown lasts a lot longer. And I find that it's once I got used to it, I didn't have too much trouble. The aiming is awkward, but, like, you have so much space in which to do it. It's not too bad.
Yeah, the slowdown just seems like a band-aid on the system. Like, I really like GTAs as much as people don't like the whole auto-aim thing of, like, you're using a controller.
Does Shadow Mordor have any, like, sensitivity or dead zone settings? Because I thought I would mess with them, but then I was like, I have so much focus, it doesn't matter. I can just...
I think it has sensitivity settings.
You might want to fuck with that a little bit.
Yeah, I haven't fiddled with the settings, though. I know I'll have to as I get further into, like, the 30-man fights.
Yeah.
Well,
in that case, like, you just point-blank shot dudes in the face. There's very little aiming, like...
Well, no, but just when it comes to messing with settings.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Any final thoughts on Shadow Mordor, or, like, anything else anyone wants to throw in?
I can't wait to play this and then play The Witcher 3 and see which future I want for myself.
I think
they both work for the games they're in. Like, one of the things about Shadow of Mordor that I think that it was really smart of them, and, like, initially I was it was a little weird to me because the game world itself, like, it's an open world game. The game world itself is not very large.
It's pretty small.
So at first I was like, this doesn't seem like there's going to be much game here.
It's well, like, for populated what it enough. Does,
yeah.
With side quests, there's some side missions I didn't really talk about, but they're decent. And there's some collectibles which are also decent. Mm-hmm. I think what Witcher 3 is going to come through is that it's going to have a much more huge and very, from the set, very densely populated game world with lots of scripted events, and I think it's going to be fine for what it is. I think what Shadow Mordor is, it's going to be probably more memorable than Witcher because of its systems. I don't think it's going to, like, overshadow Witcher at all.
Well, and just because of the sheer scale of what Witcher 3 is trying to do, like, what the Shadow Mordor Nemesis system is doing, like, I don't think that would even be possible in the Witcher 3 world.
Yeah,
it's really going to come down to, for me, I want to see if this whole, like, generated system, a system based upon my actions, is more compelling to me than Witcher, which will be a very, like, open but scripted. It's going to be very scripted. It's going to be the traditional, like, the peak of the traditional way of writing a fantasy game versus this new way of writing a fantasy game. I can't wait to see the comparison between the two. It's going to be very cool.
Yeah, it's very exciting for games to come as well as games that are out now. But for now, we are going to take a short break and then come back to what else we've been playing. So, right after this. And we're back with the power of editing. We're going to keep going with what we've been playing by asking Squiddle Hi. What have you been playing?
So most of y'all who listen to this know that I've kind of been in transition between moving. So I just now got my computer back up and running tonight, actually. Nice. So most of my gaming has been relegated to mobile platforms, be it Android or now iOS, since I recently acquired my iPhone 6 Plus. Mm-hmm. And
I just feel like the voice of like Shinboy is like, and also 3DS.
And I also 3DS that is still sitting at my house behind a mattress that I have to get rid of that's still charging but hasn't been used in since PAX in Boston.
So yeah, anyway, I don't know if you know, but you can play that 3DS on a roller coaster.
I'm actually I hear that and I saw that, and I will not do that, either one of those.
All right. So what have you been playing?
So I was playing The Room for a while. I think I talked about it last time.
Yeah,
and finally got through a part of the puzzle on like the third stage. I can't remember which one it was. That was just like racking my brain on trying to figure out.
Some of them are tricky in ways that I'm not a huge fan of. Not to talk about The Room too much here.
I really love it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, The Room is incredible. Really
yeah.
Yeah, I found that when I get frustrated and I'm up till 2 a.m., that I should just put the game down and go to bed and then take another stab at it in about a week.
Yeah, see, I play on the train, so like it was either like I do that and solve the puzzle or I stare out the window. So I was like,
okay. But yeah, so I'm still digging that game, still loving it.
What was the puzzle, by the way? Which puzzle was it?
Which one was it?
It's hard to pick out specific puzzles in that game. They're kind of blurred together.
This one may be very familiar. I think it's where you had to light a wick to get the projector to play.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I couldn't find the wick for the or the kindling or whatever you want to call it. And then finally I was like, huh, that looks different. And it's amazing being on a phone that's, I guess for me, I'm used to playing games on, you know, big screens. So you can kind of like really do the, you know, where's Waldo thing? What's different, yeah. You know, and everything. On a small screen like that, it's a lot more difficult. So
I keep telling you to get an iPad, and you keep buying weird new massive phones.
I just bought a bigger 5.5-inch screen, so you
can, like, what are you doing? There's an iPad Mini, which would probably be like fucking no money, compared to what you could just fucking drop.
No, I'm not going to carry an iPad. I told you this before in the last podcast. I want one device that I can use as a phone and also game on. I don't want to carry around five different things. I already carry a laptop.
So you bought a 10-mile-wide phone.
Exactly. Zachary. Right. Yep. Zachary, the guy I talked to, he's right on board. So there you go. So, and now that I played The Room, I haven't beaten it, and I switched over to iOS, so I'm probably going to buy it on there, that platform, to get to where I am and finish that, but I'm really looking forward to trying the other ones, just because it's really cool and creepy at the same time when you're outside playing it in the dark and all the noises. Really, really good game. The other one I was playing was Hitman Go. I think I talked about that last time.
Yeah,
still going through that. Actually ended up accidentally formatting my phone, so I had to kind of start over because Android doesn't have a thing where it backs up your saves to where you were. So when you re-download it, it just goes, oh, you were here. And then you keep going. So that was kind of a bummer, but still enjoying that game. My biggest one that I wanted to talk about, because it was brought up a long time ago for PC, I think even Patrick Klepek talked about it and like fell in love with it, was Banner Saga.
Yeah.
And I saw the game. I fell in love with it. I thought it was really cool. I believe it was a Kickstarter, if I'm not mistaken. And I thought it was really nifty, but when they said it was like a turn-based thing, I thought, you know, I don't sit at my computer and want to do turn-based. I like the immediate gratification and action. But when I'm on the phone or on the pooper with my phone, I like the, you know, slow grind and you know, doing things and interacting. So I guess different ways of doing things, whatever. I love that game for the way it looks on the iPhone 6 Plus. Now, the screen size, I'm going to keep iterating that because that's my only experience I have with that game is on that phone. And because it took me 3 freaking weeks to get this damn thing from Shenzhen, China. So anyway.
The thing's like a small tablet, right?
It is. It's a 5.5-inch screen. It is essentially a small tablet. So the screen is great for that game. because I would never want to play that on a smaller screen than at least what I'm on. I'd love to play it on a bigger one. I may even buy it to play on my PC. But it's pretty cool from what I've seen so far. I only did the first mission. The storyline is great. And one of the things that I found that I did, I talked about this a long time ago on, I don't know if it was this podcast or the Lincoln cast that we also did, was that you can basically AirPlay your stuff to your TV through an Apple TV onto your screen. I do mirroring, and I ended up doing mirroring for the beginning half of that game, where a lot of it was cutscenes, and then also then you started playing, and it worked very seamlessly. Like you, I would hit a button to do an action, and it would immediately, there was like maybe like a 0.3 second lag between the TV and my action on the screen. So I could literally look up at the screen, and if I knew where my finger was, I could interact with all the characters while looking at it on a big 50-inch TV. Now, which is really, really cool to do.
I know that XCOM also had a port to, well, it was iPad, but I can't see why it wouldn't go to the giant screen that is the iPhone 6 Plus. But like for them, one of the big issues was having to scale down a lot of the art assets, the models of the various characters, and make them, you know, be a smaller file size. Yeah. Banner Saga has a different approach with their models and whatnot, and then it's all artistic. How do the graphics hold up on that screen, whether it be your hands or this weird magic to the main TV you were speaking about?
One of the cool things that I saw that kind of was like, when I started playing it, that really drew me in was the perspective when you're playing. I don't know how this works on the PC. I can only equate to this platform here.
I play the PC version so I can
tell you. When you're looking at the screen, like just say you're opening, you're looking at the opening before you hit play or, you know, new game or whatever. Mm-hmm. As you turn your phone back and forth, the panel changes almost like the perspective from
a Disney movie.
That's pretty cool. I just did not do that on the PC version.
Yeah. So when you're holding it, it's like you can move it and it kind of pans a little bit. You couldn't see behind that corner. Now you can see behind that corner, much like the Amazon phone does with its perspective thing, with looking in a forest type thing. It was really cool. And they took that into when you're actually playing around, let's just say, where you still have that tilt shift almost functionality or tilting functionality, maybe not tilt shift, that which is kind of cool and feels more interactive.
I'm not sure, like, this might be something new with the phone with the tilt and shift, but, like, you mean, like, if you were to slide from, left to right of the screen, you can see things in the foreground and the background, similar to, like, one of the old Disney movie or Disney movies?
No, not much like that. I mean, people who have used an iPhone 5S knows that, you know, you can set a wallpaper for a dynamic wallpaper, and it's almost as if you tilt it to make it look like it's in a 3D environment. A person standing there could be three-dimensional inside of that single screen. As you move them, you kind of see a little bit more perspective as you turn left or right to round them out as a character. So it kind of has that same functionality on a 2D plane, but it looks 3D, if that makes any sense. It's very hard to explain it unless you actually see it. And there are probably videos out there that you can look at.
I'll have to look into this because that's especially weird considering it was pretty much just a 2D game, like it more or less on the PC.
Right. But the artwork, I mean, the art, it still is 2D. Please don't get me wrong by that, but it's just as rich as the pictures I saw in video gameplay on this platform as it was on the PC. And you know, the controls are tight. I mean, it's basically, you know, you tap a character and then you do an action, you tap a square and you move. So that, my biggest thing with most games that are ported, where you have to have a controller on the screen, your thumb's always on a screen and you're moving it up or down like a D-pad, you don't have that. So that's why I really liked this kind of, I guess you call it the RTS base, where you just say, you know, your character is activated, go to this square right here, touch the enemy, do this action to said enemy. But it really, it's very pretty, extremely pretty. The storyline is really good so far. Like I said, I'm only about 15 minutes into the game. I am not very far. So people may say, well, how do you know about the story? Well, 15 minutes is already getting me to want to keep playing. So that must mean something.
Yeah. I really enjoy just the past couple years where we've had just this resurgence of indie games, but more so in the same line of the iPhones and the smartphone craze that has happened. It's been nice to see indie developers because they have these just simple concepts, can transfer easily to those devices. And often we'll see stuff like Bastion being released on like 7 different things, which does give some longevity and some more like some budget to increase it.
Right.
Getting it to larger audiences makes it so that they can be more independent and make follow-up games like Transistor, which I'm not sure if that's on iPhone or not yet.
I don't think so. It probably will be.
It probably will be eventually.
I bought Bastion. The first time I played Bastion was on iOS. I purchased it on there before I bought it on PC just because it was really cheap and I had nothing else to do. Never really played it much because it was very hard to control on the tiny screen. I will, now that I have 128 gigs or said worth of storage on this damn thing, I will probably end up downloading it and playing it more. I love Transistor. I'm really hoping they do port it to iOS. But my big thing is when it comes to games that I play, which I would love for people to give me feedback, either in, on our
forum. If only you had a Twitter that they could follow.
And I do at Mr. Squiddle. Send me things. Cause I like games that I don't want to pay money to play games. I want games in their purest form. I'm not into, doing games where I have to have a buy-in. I will pay Squaresoft $17 for Chaos Ring that I bought at one time for whatever God knows reason to play a game where, you're not having to have a microtransaction built in. I mean, if you have a game that is...
Okay, so you're willing to pay like an upfront cost for a product rather than the idea of, oh, it's free, like asterisk sort of style.
Yeah, I actually, if it's free, I think it's a shit game. I refuse to say, I'm going to play a game because it's free, because why not? I'd rather play a game that has some substance to it, and they charge me at least, 10, 15 bucks for it.
Well, I'm sorry you don't like Dota 2.
Well, that's different, though. I can understand the concept on a big PC where there's more interaction. It's a different...
Also, it's all cosmetic.
Yeah. No, I had to joke about that. Anyway, so it's...
But you can say the same thing for Guild Wars. Guild Wars is free to play, but not you have to still buy it.
Yeah, so you can buy to play. It's a nice middle ground between this whole, it's pay a large amount up front and subscription fees, or the whole free-to-play concept, relying on whales.
I was going to say, has anyone else played Battlestar recently? I'm just wondering if there's any news on the follow-ups to it.
I played it a couple of months ago.
Because it ends in a cliffhanger, right? I haven't played it yet. I've been saving
it until I know. Yeah, it definitely ends in, this is an act one of a several act series thing.
Yeah.
Would you recommend
playing it by itself? Because I've played it.
I think it's... Well, I have... my thoughts about the game are kind of complicated. I think that game does a lot of interesting things, but it kept punching me in the face and I kept coming back to it. I love the art style. And the combat was pretty fun, but it's really difficult. And then every choice you make is just... It punishes you for things like just randomness. It's so... Ugh. It's a miracle I did that game.
Is that a good thing?
It's up to you to decide whether or not that's a good thing. I thought it was really annoying, but some people, you might really enjoy that. I don't know.
Is that a person who tries to get everyone to survive a game?
Yeah, I mean, mostly. Just at some point, I was just out of all supplies, out of food, oh, God. Like, towards the end, it becomes just like
slog. There's definitely some weird video game moments
lose party members to out of combat. It's just, you have a party member, you really like this party member, you like level them up, and if you just don't realize the consequence of a choice, you'll just lose them forever just because you clicked a button.
I think it's one of the tough things you can balance, because something like XCOM, there is no story there. There's the story you create. It is a procedurally generated thing where you can actually you can rename the characters to be your friends, or I know some people have done stuff named them after NFL quarterbacks. you can make your own story out of that. But then also when someone dies, it's because you made that decision. But with something Banner Saga what's the one that you love on DS, Cynic?
Fire Emblem?
Oh man. Phoenix Riot or
the XCOM one. Where it's just people's storyline. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so Phoenix Wright game with a persistent death.
Well, yes. I just need to say Phoenix Wright out loud.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
I'm still playing it. It's still great. I was all right.
So with those, it's you have the story but then you're sort of chained to the story where, like, you know, some people enjoy that sort of thing, like having to make these social decisions out of combat and having to go with those results. But I don't think there is enough content in Banner Saga to, like, to make that enjoyable, because, like, let's say you have maybe a dozen characters in that game that are your core, like, you know, party members, and if you lose one of them, there's a very high percentage that you have invested a lot of, like, you've leveled that guy up, you gave him a lot of items, and then he's dead or he walks away, and then you've lost all that. And yeah, so
the main thing is you don't lose them for actually playing badly. You only lose them for making poor choices. Which is the bad thing.
And that was one of the things when I'm sorry, I'm jumping back in here, but when I launched the game, you know, it says, you know, the choices that you make will dictate essentially the world around you and what you do. And I thought that was the coolest thing ever. And I haven't played much of it, and I know most of y'all have. And I was kind of wondering, what do they mean by choices that you make? I mean, people that you choose, things that you do.
You'll have little, like between combat vignettes that you have to make choices in. The story will also force you to make choices.
And unfortunately, like, without having, like, it sometimes when you bring people into your party, that will, like, wreck you later on down the line. I don't want to go too far. I don't want to say anything more than that, but, like, yeah, the social thing, like, it is, a lot, there's a lot of tie-ins and a lot of decision-making. So much so that, like, at the end of the game, I'm curious how, because this is a multiple episode, like, this is an episodic game.
Yeah. Will they do a Mass Effect?
I kind of want to know how, like, episode 2 is going to happen because of what happens in episode 1. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Squiddle, for... Do you want to talk about Hitman Go?
The one thing I was just saying about Hitman Go was, you know, the controls are great. I mean, it's easy. You slide your finger, which is fine to move around. But when it comes to positioning, like, grenades that you throw, they don't really tell you that if you throw it here, this is how they're going to move. And it's kind of like a hit or miss. They don't give it to you all up in front, but that was one of my pet peeves, that I threw a grenade. I was in a perfect location and ended up getting... I killed multiple times because I couldn't figure out this one puzzle. And it's a puzzle game. So, you know, my frustration was with that. But other than that, it's a great game. I'm probably going to end up buying it on iOS as I had on Android, so I can continue playing it on a platform that actually saves my saves in case anything happens. But other than that, that's about it. Hopefully next time when we record, I'll have done Shadows of Mordor and some other fun games that I can at least talk about since I got my PC up and running finally.
A couple other things. If you want to keep going on this iOS craze, you really need to play Year Walk because it's a really good game.
I own Year Walk. I never really played it much because of the screen. So I own a bunch of these really great games that were hard to get into because of the screen size that I'm going to end up re-downloading because now I have the bigger screen. So I'm really interested in playing Year Walk, playing that. I actually have the Deus Ex game that I talked about a long time ago that I stopped playing because it was hard to get a part where you were controlling your character because of the screen size. So screen size based issues that cause problems with previous games, I'm definitely going to be re-downloading and trying them out again within the next couple weeks.
I kind of enjoy Year Walks just because it is sort of a horror game. Like they try and set a good tone for it. And there are a couple like really good scares in there, but because it's a small screen, when I played it, I had that pretty close to my face. And when there was a jump scare, there was one time where I jumped up in my seat.
Yeah, and now
the people screen, next to me thought I was crazy.
And now it's kind of hard to not have it even more in your face with that gigantic screen there. So,
and also, just saying, if you get a PS4 and a Vita, you could play those things on the pooper still and play something Shadow of Mordor.
We'll see if I want to drop $800 or $600, whatever it is, for a PS4 and a Vita. So maybe Christmas. Christmas is coming around. Maybe I'll ask for it for some good family members or yada yada.
There you go. All right, well, thank you, Squiddle. I guess we'll move on to Durin. Is there stuff you've been playing?
We talked about most of it, haven't we?
Yeah, we pretty much talked about most of it.
We can talk about
it. So some friends were playing a game, and one of them gifted it to me so I could check it out with them. It's in early access. It's called Damned. I don't know if anyone here has actually played it.
No, but I saw it. I was
never heard of it.
It's kind of an interesting premise. The idea is it's a multiplayer only game. I believe you only have one monster that spawns at a time. I'm not sure because we only played with like four of us, so it could be more as you get more people. But it's It's a, you know, survivors, or I guess, you know, humans versus the monster kind of thing. The different creatures, like, have, or I say creatures, like ghosts.
Wait, okay, I was going to say, isn't it the same game you talked with last time of humans versus vampires?
No, that was Nosgoth. This one is much less polished and much less done.
Okay.
Yeah, it's an interesting premise, but it's in early access right now. Very, very early access. But it has some cool ideas that hopefully they actually do things with.
This is that one.
It's like $20 on Steam.
About the third character clause last time we talked about it, right?
No, that was Nosgoth. That was
Nosgoth.
This is a different game. Yeah. That was the one set in the Legacy of Kain universe.
Was it?
Or whatever.
Yeah. I actually didn't remember that part about it. Okay, cool.
What is different about Damned than Nosgoth? Or what makes
Damned is not an action game. Where like Damned is more like it's like a slow paced, more like kind of horror oriented evolve sort of thing.
So asymmetrical,
much less systems. Like I said, I think there's only one of the like ghost players. One person spawns as that. Everybody else spawns as the humans.
Is Damned that arcadey one? Oh wait, what's
no? It's not arcadey.
Okay,
it's first person. Like I said, the evil side are all different variations of ghosts. There's three in right now. The humans basically have flashlights. You go around, and as the game plays right now, as the humans, you basically go around and you look for batteries to keep your flashlight going, and you look for keys to open doors, and eventually you kind of try to find your way out of the map. It's really hard for the humans to win right now. And of course, as the ghost, you just try to kill the humans. Like I said, it has some interesting ideas, but it's super early. Early access right now, but it's like $20. If you have friends that play games like that together, maybe pick it up on a sale. I think $20 is still a bit much for where it sits right now. Aside from that, mostly just Shadow of Mordor. I wrote down Star Wars: The Old Republic and WoW basically to say that again, kind of sad the noob's not here because I have canceled my subscription to Star Wars: The Old Republic.
Wow.
And I have started up my subscription again for WoW.
I saw that coming. That was good.
I hate you. Hooray.
No, it was after a month. I played and paid for a month of Star Wars. But like WoW's get like I logged into the PTR and saw their pretty new character models, and WoW like expansion's coming out in November, so that means the new patch is gonna hit this month sometime. So I basically just like went ahead and resubscribed back to that so I can get a character back up to where it needs to be for that expansion. So that Mage Knight is why those were both on there, because I did play Star Wars, canceled the sub for that, so I can go back to WoW again. But yeah, mostly it's just been Shadow of Mordor lately and then finishing Destiny. So not a whole lot of new stuff there.
Cool.
Or at least that we haven't talked about.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, we were still like Shadow of Mordor is a good one. We got Alien Isolation coming up soon. And there's been like a trickle of new games coming out that are like, you know, really cool, neat ones.
Yeah, those reviews for Alien Isolation are kind of a bummer.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
I wasn't really expecting much out of that game, to be honest.
I'm expecting a lot of streamers and YouTubers to play it, which should be entertaining.
Yeah.
But for the most part, there has been a lot of
react to Alien Isolation.
What I could talk about is Dave Lang's turnabout.
Dave Lang's turnabout by Dave Lang?
Yes, by Dave Lang Studios. Also known as No Goblins Roundabout, which is an awesome game. And seriously, like anybody who is a big Giant Bomb fan, there is some stuff in there that you will love. I really enjoyed the game. I really have only sunk a couple hours into it, and I haven't gone back to do any of the, like, I haven't tried to 100% or anything. Like, apparently there is a desert, I don't know if it's a desert golf thing, but it's a desert limo. There's weird stuff in that game that I don't know yet, but what I have seen has been an enjoyable experience. And really for only like, what, $15, I think? If anybody doesn't know, you play as Giorgio Manos, the driver of a rotating limousine in a top-down Unity-looking game. Like it's I'm pretty sure it's a Unity joint. driving around a city GTA style, but you're driving in a 360, just like you're, it's a weird game. But
it's one of those games that are like, seems like a joke when you hear about it. And it is a joke.
It is a joke.
Real game.
Yeah.
I don't know how people are going to buy it, and I don't know how people are going to like it.
I mean, he kind of set it up as a 70s B movie. Because, like, you know, half of it to two thirds is you driving around. What seems initially like a joke ends up being a kind of puzzle of kind of like dancing your way around this town. Because as you rotate, you don't fit through, like, you know, the streets or the cars in the way or the stuff is stationary. So you have to sort of like move at the right time and it just makes this elegant movements while running over people and causing, you know, rampant destruction.
Right.
But then when you're not doing the gameplay, there is some pretty choice, right? Like high quality writing, full motion video stuff happening.
I question your calling any of that quality.
It is of a quality.
I drink it up. It's so good. It's so good in that it is so bad, which makes it so good. And actually, okay.
So did you back the Kickstarter and have you played the first person mode?
I did not back the Kickstarter, but I did get the deluxe edition, which really that is something that I've like. I enjoy games having a like moderately priced like a couple bucks more deluxe edition, especially indie games, because stuff like Gunpoint has just like they will throw you the like in development like the early build levels, which is kind of what Roundabout does with you get a PAX build with a first person camera in a rotating limousine game.
So great.
it's so great. But then like also like you get developer commentary and stuff for levels for Gunpoint. Roundabout gives you the soundtrack with like people dancing and just a video loop. It's really good. It's a good game. Also, there's
okay,
a point.
The plot? What's the plot? What's the plot? Is there a plot?
It's like 70s B movie. I mean,
like, what is the actual? Can you remember any of? Is it
you
any
are,
way?
You are the limo driver who, while just starting off, and like your first level is you get your license from the DMV or BMV. I forget what it's bureau or I think it's bureau. Then you just pick up people, and you end up picking up a fare that or like a that is a love interest and.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man.
Is she a femme fatale figure?
No.
Okay.
I think it's the 70s. I don't know. It's just wacky and silly. And you also have a rival limousine driver who is also rotating. And you race him a couple times. And then you challenge him.
Wow.
And also there's there's the second act down on their luck. Kind of getting, just taking in drugs and seeing, you know, skeletons. And skeletons that talk. That's... you know, every 70s B movie, you know, trope. But yeah, ultimately, it's just a great video game that I had both arms up cheering when there was a third camera shot.
That's fantastic.
Because for the rest of the game, it's just a two camera shot. And I was like, wait, that's a third camera. Yes.
That's hilarious.
Anybody needs further convincing, please watch the Giant Bomb Quick Look on it or Quick Look EX with Dan Teasdale.
Of course it's EX. Of course it's an EX.
Yeah.
Love it. Oh, man. Yeah, that's cool.
That's Roundabout.
Yeah. Would you recommend someone who doesn't know Giant Bomb to buy it?
Yes, because it is a good of... Okay, when people who are big into games or whatnot really get like depressed with the triple A's and they're just like, oh, I don't know if I like gaming anymore. Roundabout is an excellent example of like just jumping into something new with the idea of the indie game. It's new, it's silly, it's a couple hours consumed, and it's a price of like the quarter of a triple A game. And it's a nice thing. And it's not just like giant bomb joke. It's like there's really good humor on its own and stands up well. It's good. I like it. It's a thing I like. So one other thing, just to throw in a little bit of Arma in that I know you guys all hate, the brother and the guy who did the sound for this game is a big Arma, like he's a YouTuber who does Arma and XCOM stuff. Haha, threw in some Arma this episode.
Huh.
The other game, that's great. It's Beagle Rush, I think is his online handle. Yeah, it's a weird thing. Anyway, the other game I've been playing, sort of playing, getting into, has been Dota 2. I'm sorry.
I don't know what to say, man.
I played a lot of Dota 1 before even this podcast started.
Yeah.
I had a friend who is just like, hey, I want to try out this Dota thing. Do you know anything about it? And I'm like, sort of? Because I know everything about Dota 1, but Dota 2 is its own beast that is just like all the characters are renamed and sometimes reskinned. And like, I think I know this looks like Bloodseeker, but he has a weird name, but it looks like that guy. And so I've been playing a couple rounds of that and getting into that. And that's a weird game, you guys.
Huh.
Mage Knight, would you agree?
It's weird and amazing.
It
are you finding it compelling? Like, is this something you think you'll continue doing?
Compelling.
Or are you just like...
I'm at a weird point.
How compelling is on a scale of 0 to 7 out of 10?
Yeah, I'd say not compelling.
Uh-huh.
Wait, did you say 0 out of... No, 7 out of 0 out of 10. Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is... It's... Seems like a good way for, like, similar to MMOs, where I can, like, just meet up with friends. Kind of like Destiny, where I can just play a couple games, like, all my friends
are
doing...
Except you all hate each other at the end, and it's
yeah.
Great.
Well, I do... That's why you just stick to bot matches, because none of my friends actually want to try stuff.
Secrets does not really care. Like, and at the end of the day, your worth as a human being is not judged by your performance in Dota, no matter how much it feels like it sometimes.
What are you talking about? I don't understand.
But yeah, like
Dota, every MOBA is a game that you like
better with friends.
It's better with friends, and also like the game is designed, and why everyone loves it, I feel, is because the slightest mistake at any point can like lose you the game.
Oh yeah, especially nowadays.
And that goes for like both sides. So if like you've made the mistake, and then the other team just hammering you, and then they slip up a little bit. And you catch them on that, then you can turn around and win it. And so it has the potential to make these amazing experiences better than any other game. So like the idea of we've been talking about procedural generation, there's a reason why there's only one map in Dota and every MOBA is because the enjoyment factor comes from those rare moments of like come from behind victories or just insane moments. And the rest of the time, I'm talking about like 99% of the time, you're having a shitty time.
Nice.
But that 1% is so amazing. You keep looking for that high.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if I'm going to get into it. I might just stick to bot matches with friends.
I'm sorry. I'm not sure if you've already asked this, but I'm going to ask again. Are you playing this with voice chat or not?
I kind of have to. Game is so much about communication that playing without voice chat is highly not recommended.
I'm pretty sure there's voice chat built in the game.
Yeah, there's built in voice chat.
I have not been playing with voice chat right
now. It's Valve's Silk protocol that they use in like TF2 and then Counter-Strike.
Bot matches are just my friends and everyone else, including teammates or bots.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So
it's less critical there, but...
Yeah.
It's good to practice communication in that game whenever possible, because very, very critical.
Like, the communication is a big part of it, and when people start raging at each other, which they often do in public matches,
it gets
often. For anybody doing, like, wanting to get into stuff like that, what I often consider is, like, I always try to do, like, in League, I would play ranked modes, and I'm sure if I ever get into Dota, I will try doing, like, a captain's match, or just, like, any of the ones that...
Yes, playing five-man stacks and maybe captains, if you're confident with drafting, that's definitely the best way to experience that game. In fact, I would say that it's the only way you should experience it, but it's very, very hard to, like, attain that, so...
Yeah, it's because anything where, like, A, there is a prep time before gameplay... immediately sends trolls away, and they don't want, because they just want to instantly get into a game, and if they're having the slightest bad time, that's when they start raging. And so
I've definitely had people rage. I mean, like, what you get in the captain's mode is people who really want to win.
Yeah.
So in that case, when things go badly, they're still going to rage, but you're not going to have any trolls. Yeah, you're going to have less trolls.
You're going to have people who are committed to the idea of winning and will put the slightest bit of effort into like trying to communicate and promote the idea of winning. Yes?
Yes. Well, okay. Unfortunately, the communication issue isn't terribly solved by Captain's Web. People still go in Captain's Web and don't say a goddamn thing. And most people are the worst, because then it's like you're just drafting stuff, and you're like, you don't know why, and they won't communicate to you what their ideas are. That's why I said play with a five-man, because with a five-man, and all your friends, you can all communicate with each other, and that's when the game will like really shine. Otherwise, you're just five people being angry at each other because you can't communicate.
So yeah, I'll still probably stick with bot matches, at least until next summer when the games drought happens again.
Maybe bot matches until you get comfortable with it.
Then maybe join the PC Gamer Hub or something. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a Giant Bomb channel that people always go to find like friendly matches.
Yeah. So that is what I've been playing. I think we've covered everybody and we're going to go to news topics.
Yay! Of the, news! Like,
since we've written down and one I've crossed out already. Okay. One of the reasons why I brought Mage Knight on was to help educate me on what the crap's happening in Kerbal. Because I read that they're adding biomes.
I like how much this happened this week, and you're talking about Kerbal, but I'm going to let you.
They're not adding biomes. Well, there's a new update coming out. It's 0.25. It's called Economic Boom. And they're not adding biomes.
I guess 0.26, I think.
Oh, 0.26. Yeah, 0.25 was... The last one.
I think 0.25 is coming out. I think 0.26 is when they're adding biomes. So they've teased this.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So he probably wants to, you know, like, I think what that means is there's now clouds that are moving quick. Like, there's dust clouds.
No, biomes are zones of, like, scientific interest on a planet. So instead of the whole planet, like, getting science from it, you go to, like, a specific area and you'll get individual science for each of those areas. So right now the moon and Mindus has them. And not anything else. So what they're going to do is they're going to add biomes to every single planet. So like if there's more detailed density in each planet.
So like the Sea of Tranquility kind of thing on like
yeah
like,
exactly. So you're going to a specific you're trying to land in a specific region and gather science from there.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's hard enough just to get to a planet and to land in a specific spot.
Yep.
God.
Yep. It's gonna be fun. And what's going to happen is you're going to get more science, which is crazy because there's already a wealth of science via the contracts. But
yeah, like it's the Cynic and Durin and Squid, like it's tough enough to do something. Then you have to do it as fuel efficiently as possible because every ounce of fuel you bring on more take the, like the whole, it's a domino effect of the whole thing just gets bigger and bigger. And it's just I'm bad at driving around or flying around in Kerbal. I want to feel like everyone is, but I know secretly, just you know, Mage Knight knows exactly how much Delta V it takes, and
not exactly. I usually have a tool where they'll give me some idea.
All right, so what is happening in the Economic Boom update?
So what they're going to do is they're going to add this new thing called the Administrative Center, which will add some like specializations you can use to sort of change. They add some bonuses, so like you might get less reputation but more money for something, or more reputation but less money. Or you might get more science or for some other trade-off, stuff like that.
Is there, like, there's reputation now, too, as well? Or was that previously?
There's been reputation ever since the career update. Okay. Reputation sort of determines what missions you get.
Okay.
And I think they're going to sort of update the contract system and then add it out. Because the basic contract system is just that. It's very basic. They need to widen it up some. And they're also adding some neat stuff like destructible buildings. So now when you drop your stages right over Kerbal Space Center, it will destroy your hangar and you have to rebuild it for money.
Yeah, I have that problem. I'm going to have to try and figure out how to
do a more realistic launch path. Or you're launching over the ocean, so your stages drop into the ocean instead of straight down.
Or I could just attach parachutes to all my stuff. That'll be fine,
you could
right?
do that as well, yeah. It's kind of hard to recover stuff because it despawns after a certain distance, but...
Distance? That's actually interesting. All
right. Yeah, stuff outside of, like, I forget exactly what the distance is, but it despawns physics objects to keep things. If it's not in orbit, if it's in a suborbital trajectory, and it's a certain distance away from you, it will despawn to keep RAM.
Yeah, I mean, like, people need to remember that, like, this was a company that was made by, like, they originally were not a video game company, and they just, like, this everyone should look up, and I'll try and put this as a plug. I think PC Gamer does a really good article. Might be a Polygon article,
it was Polygon.
Yeah, the story of how Kerbal Space Program came to be. But
Squad is the name of the developer.
Long story short, they are like this is not a finely tuned, elegant piece of coding for the game. And so when you have like a 500 piece rocket, and that like goes from one piece that is the rest of your rocket that's like 300 pieces, and then like 50 other pieces that were your stages to take off from orbit, uh-huh. it's going to take a bit of processing power to try and remember where all those things went. So instead, it just forgets where the 50 went after a while.
Yeah.
Right.
Because video games.
Yeah, they're really pushing the Unity engine to its knees. Like they're pushing it so hard. Like I think they, as a long-term goal, they want to do multi-body stuff, and that's going to be something if they pull that off.
Yeah, if they pull off multiplayer, multi-body, that's going to be crazy.
Multi-body, well, yeah, they want to do multi-body. Multi-body is something different. Multi-body physics, in physics, multi-body is when you're dealing with the gravitational pull of more than two bodies at a time. So, they have things called Kappa orbits, which is just like a point orbiting around a gravitational body, which is what Kerbal has right now. That's why you get these nice little circular orbits. Multi-body is where you get stuff like Lagrange points, where you have like a point of equilibrium between two points where something will just kind of like oscillate. And that stuff is crazy, but it also takes a huge amount of processing power, even to just approximate.
No. Please, no.
Yeah. No. You want Lagrange points because they're awesome, but it also adds all sorts of craziness to orbits. You get like figure eight orbits and stuff like that. It's wild. Yeah, I want multibody so bad, but it's a hell of an engineering feat to get it working.
So,
engineering feat by terms of a simulation. I would say that if a game developer, they could probably figure it out. Like, games are very hard to code as is. So you just look at graphics code.
I'm saying multibody is something that's eluding like high level physicists to get accurate approximations of.
I meant the actual processing game would require. No,
it's as a physics problem, it is difficult, computationally difficult.
So you're saying video games are now approaching the level of
only when they're trying to be space simulations.
if you look at the way games are programmed today, they the people working on them are actually as pretty much in the same bracket of intelligence as astrophysicists, etc., that I know.
A lot of times, yeah.
It's hard, yeah. It's hard. Games are hard.
Yeah, trying to get just No Man's Sky. They were reading up on crazy levels of stuff.
Fractals.
Yeah. So, Steam got a facelift. The Steam front page looks weird. Cynic doesn't like the Steam front page, does Cynic? But you don't have to worry about the front page, right, Cynic? Because now you can just go to what your curators tell you to look at.
I'm so confused by everything I see. why is the bar on the left now? Like, little things that they could have kept the same that didn't. It's like they're just trying to mock me with... I hate infinitely scrolling pages, too, because I want to see everything on the... It's like they're trying to say, "Hey, this is everything you need to see. I'm right here at the top of the page." But if it's not,
you're talking about curation, which is exactly what this update's all about. Like the fact that new releases are not all new releases, so it's not flooded by Broderbund software. It's now featured new releases, so they can pull stuff out.
Yeah, I like the idea of a lot of what they're doing. I just don't like the look of it and the way they're presenting the information and just how much information there is.
Because it's different. I think I like it.
I didn't like the last Steam either. That last Steam was bad. There's two things I really don't like. One is infinitely scrolling pages. There's a legitimate pet peeve of mine because it feels like I can never get as much information as I want. Because it gives me too much. It gives me too much at the same time. I've never liked infinitely scrolling pages. I hate how mobile websites tend to do that quite a lot. Like the Verge's mobile website does that. Anyway, that I don't like, but mainly it's just confusing to me. I don't know. Popular new releases is good, but it should be higher up in the page. I don't need this massive banner which says tells me there's a Paradox sale. You should know by the fact that I have zero strategy games in my thing that I don't care about Paradox. There's weird things about this.
But you should buy Crusader Kings 2 for $40.
How will you know unless you don't buy it and try it out?
I have zero strategy games on my Steam list. None. Not a single goddamn one. And it's still asking me to buy it. I care about Paradox.
They have more strategy games.
Failing in ways.
They have Magicka.
They do have Magicka.
IntelliGlitch.
Yeah. No? Okay. Well, it's okay. So
I already own Magicka, goddammit, and I don't care about it. Anyway.
The other thing, and this is I'm just gonna more or less regurgitate what everyone else has been saying. One of the big issues previously, pre-update, was a lot of just, third-party companies and just off companies were just shoveling out their old games or just their trashy games in bulk. So like some days,
new releases.
You'll go to new releases, and there might be one or two gems that have been dropped earlier that day, but then the dozen this is no knock against Sherlock Holmes, but the dozen Sherlock Holmes games from
what are you talking about? That's what I want to see on my front page.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, just looking at the popular new releases, just for the day, this is post-release. This is the same issue. There are five indie-looking games of various looks, but then the bottom five are all Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Phantoms.
Yeah.
So like DLC things.
And this is popular new release. This is in the popular new releases section.
So what the new Steam has done, you can customize it. I don't think I've done this yet to not show early access games, show DLC.
The best part about it.
So you can customize your own look. What the Steam curation thing says is if you follow certain people, anybody who has a Steam group can be a curator, and if people follow them, they can suggest certain games for you to try out. Right. This does have a couple issues because, the top curator is Total Biscuit, a YouTuber. Stands to reason other prominent YouTubers will be showing stuff off.
Yeah.
The idea, the business model of the YouTuber is to get people to watch their stuff, to get views, to get advertisers, to get money from the advertisers, to make a living. So they want people to click on their stuff and watch the videos and see the ads. So they want to review everything, good or bad. So they want to have a Steam curator link for everything. There is no thumbs up or thumbs down for Steam curators. So if you follow these people, you won't know what they're talking about that is good or bad unless you take that extra step to look at stuff. So the Steam curation thing will possibly, depending on who you follow, become a flood of stuff as well, good and bad. Further this by something I just learned that I don't know if what you guys think about this, and I'd like to hear your opinions. If you go to any game on Steam, you will see the opinion of a curator, even if you are not following them. However, that video game company, like the people who post that thing on Steam, indie or AAA, can choose who, they can selectively opt out anybody who has chosen to curate the game and write something about it. So they can just make it so that any Joe who goes to a video game, they don't let them see any bad review curator review of the game. They have the option to do that.
Okay, right. All right. So Total Biscuit makes these are the bad games.
Total Biscuit makes a WTF is of a game and then craps on it and then posts it in his Steam curators.
The bad game.
Yeah, that developer can choose to make it so that anybody who is not following Total Biscuit, I don't know if this works for if they are following Total Biscuit, if they go to that game's page, if they go to the War Z's page, whatever it's called now, they do not see the bad review. They only see the good.
Is that different from how games have always advertised themselves? They always have the 5-star review on the box. Which is Alien Isolation on the front page has the game Alien series is always deserved. PC Gamer, 93%. It's how games have always been. They purposefully look for good stuff, and that's the only thing they show. This is no different to that, really.
Yeah. It's that side is no different. The side of the curator system will come with its flaws. And the other flaw of the system that we pre-update, cool indie games are getting thrown to the ground under the flurry of other stuff. Yeah. And so indie games are they're still having to fight upstream to try and get noticed.
And so there's good and bad sides of this. I hate early access and unfinished games in general. So that whole stream of indie games is just going to disappear from me when I figure out how to customize this page. Because I've been clicking around for this for the last 5 minutes and I haven't figured it out yet. So
there's something called customize on most of the windows that you can use to change stuff.
Where is it?
Let me look.
We should do this when we're not recording the
episode. And secondly,
if you hover over like the main like featured window up on the right hand corner, there's a little customize button.
I think he's trying to customize the first thing of like
the main page. But the second part of it is so unfinished games we won't see anymore. So that's a big avenue of indie games we won't see. And secondly, a lot of these lists are still in their infancy, so they're just like, oh, these are all the games I love from like all time. So like you have these lists of all these amazing games, but they're like either old or just like big budget games that have been around for a long time. To the point where it's going to take these guys who are popular to make concerted efforts to make lists for new interesting games before any discoverability of that line reemerges. Really, it's sad in a way, but at the same time, like I'll take that trade. I will take the trade of seeing less interesting indie games on the front page of Steam to never see a fucking unfinished game again. That's my stance on it. So,
and early access. Another side of this, which hopefully Mage Knight and maybe Cynic and Duran Warnock can fill me in on. During the break, someone pointed out that Twitch is doing something along these same lines. That there's another danger to this. And that is a prominent YouTuber could be getting paid money to advertise the game, of which then they put on the curation list, and then that like they put a good review on it, and so it is kind of muddying the waters of like, you know, is Steam getting paid money to advertise the game and put it on the front page, sort of thing.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know. I'm referencing the. ARS, the thing that was linked to me earlier.
Isn't that kind of like an article about it? Thing with big budget games already get top spot anyway. So it's kind of like just continuing the same trend. I don't know.
Sure. No, I just like on. I think this is like what I'm going to say is just going to be as far as I want to go into it for this podcast. Mm-hmm. But the whole Gamergate of wanting disclosure on relationships between developers and
game the stuff makers. We'll never know.
Yep,
exactly. Yeah, and it's one of those things that when the people are getting more power, which they are, like, that's essentially what this is becoming in some ways.
You can say for the past 50 years, it's gone from large groups of people that like have power to individual having power.
Exactly. On all fronts. So by the people, I mean like by the normal layman now has power. It immediately muddies, like, it brings me back to the whole, and I'm going to literally say this turnaround in the last 3 years. Over the last 3 years, I went from, hey, big websites are awesome, that's where I get my recommendations for games, to, oh my god, YouTube's awesome because it's really interesting, new and indie, and that's where I'm going to get my recommendations for game. Back to, now I'm at, hey, big websites are where it's at because they actually tell me the actual games I want to play. Not these are a million games you might want to play that are varying levels of good, or even worse, oh, these are all amazing. These are great games. How awesome is this game? You should play it, which is what 99% of what YouTube has become.
Yeah, it is. Big companies had, like, you know, they had levels to uphold to. They had, like, you know, integrity to follow. And then when it comes down to an individual person, they're, I guess, much more, like, they're possibly more susceptible to stuff like that. But again, I don't want to go too much into this, whatever. So Steam is new. If you haven't checked out Steam and you are listening to this podcast and a PC gamer, check out Steam.
I still haven't found this customize button. Where the
fuck? Just hover over
the mouse over the sliding thing. Video games.
Also, there's customized buttons like right there on like the nuanced team that recently updated.
Do we want to talk about Titan?
Oh my god, is it literally a button that says customize?
Yes.
Oh, I was looking for a gear, like the settings button, like a gearbox looking.
No, it just says the word customize.
It just says the word customize. Thank you.
No, if you want a gearbox, go to Borderlands, the pre-sequel.
Nice.
Nice.
Check early access.
Anyway, do you want to talk about Titan Blizzard's MMO canceling after 7 years of development and millions of dollars being invested into it?
I mean, what is there to say, really?
I have to wonder if that was an Activision decision. I'm really curious if...
I think StarCraft Ghost proves it's not an Activision decision.
Yeah, well, yeah, StarCraft Ghost was a previous one, but it, yeah. I don't know.
I think they came to the conclusion that everyone else in the world has come to, is that MMORPGs are not fun. You can't make them fun. They're fundamentally broken.
Is Durin still here, or is he AFK? I don't know.
I think he's still AFK, so I can say this.
Yeah, yeah.
Whoa, now. Whoa,
dang
whoa, whoa. Oh, damn it. You know it's true.
He's got his wireless headphones.
Listen, they are no less fun than Dota 2.
Whoa. Okay, now I'm rolling up my sleeves right now. Think.
Wow. So Dan Riker is a guy on GiantBomb.com, a website about video games.
Dan Riker, huh?
And I feel primarily because of him, there's the recent video of him and Jeff Gerstmann racing on a roller coaster while also racing
in
Mario 3.
How did they get a roller coaster to themselves?
I don't know. They just showed press passes, so I assume they talked to someone and they said, okay.
They either were like they either got an in from CBS, which I don't know if CBS also owns some of that park, or they just showed up really early. Like if you show up, like on,
no, I think they had it themselves. So I think, I mean, maybe they showed up early, but I'm pretty sure they just like talked to someone.
As somebody who has worked at a,
they had cameras set up too.
No, they did not just show up early. No?
Yeah, they had cameras like in the car and stuff. They had like angles, yeah. So they must have.
Well, they had a bunch of GoPros. Like that part was sold, but
yeah.
It had to be. Yeah, it had to be some of that CBS money.
The part that just like blew me fucking away was when I was watching them tape GoPros to the roller coaster cars, and that was okay.
I'd like to see,
yeah, that's cool.
They talked to someone, and that someone was for some reason said yes. I don't know why. Who in their right mind would say yes to such an idea? But
here's how: if I were to try to do something like that, here's how I imagine it would play out. Of like they did the call ahead of time to plan it and say, yeah, we'll show up. Then when they were there, they were like, hey, can we strap these GoPros? They did the whole taping thing of setting them up. And then, well, they did a test run with just the GoPros and no humans to see if they wouldn't fall off and how they would sustain that sort of, you know, stress. That's when there's that little clip of Dan and Jeff looking at it, like, you know, doing its run and, like, talking through the various, you know, corkscrews and all that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
All I know is that this probably all started in a conference room somewhere with lawyers and HR, and I don't know how the fuck Dan convinced them to do this.
I think it's the opposite. I think they're taking the forgiveness, not permission route here, and just found it in someone.
The reason I know that that's not the case is because Dan has been trying to do this at Game Informer for years.
Really?
Game Informer would not pass it. That's why Dan was so like. That's why when they talked about it on UPF, like Dan's made a comment. He's been wanting to do this for years, and he's so glad that Giant Bomb lets him do stupid stuff like this because he's been trying illegally. He's been trying to do it for years.
Wow!
I didn't know that at all. I need to say here, like first of all, Dan Riker is a man of he's an onion. That man's an onion. I go from thinking he isn't.
He is the
most complete fucking idiot I've ever seen.
One player, and that is Dan Reichert.
Is he? Yeah. Is he just like
you know what? I am proud that he is from my home area.
The fact that he can complete not one but like six levels of goddamn Mario 3.
No, you're right. He got all the way to the castle. You're right.
Yeah, it's like a shitload of levels whilst on a motherfucking roller coaster. And only while it's moving. Only while it's moving. He could not play while it stopped. That guy's a monster. I have no idea how.
I just, you know, there is no understanding Dan Riker. Like,
yeah.
Enigma wrapped in a mystery.
Just look at his Twitter page and you will just stop even trying to understand
him. I kind of will. There was this thing where I looked and like, oh, who's talking on Twitter? And I just saw like, oh, Dan Riker posted something. He's trying to figure out the best line of The Rock, and I clicked the link, and then I'd spent the next half hour watching clips from The Rock.
Nice. I spent your time.
I found The Rock and watched it because he talked about it so goddamn much at this point. I have to say,
it's a good movie.
It's not in the top three. It's a good movie. It's not in the top three. I think he's a fucking crazy person.
I mean, yeah, he has very specific tastes, and that I don't know.
Yeah,
it's a pretty good movie.
I didn't know what it was. I thought that The Rock was like a heist movie, so I was totally fucking
no, not that.
No, not at all. No.
Do you like Sean Connery? Do you like Sean Connery killing fools?
Sean Connery, like the Rock? Yes. Sean Connery and Nicolas Cage at his best.
Yes.
Yep. Sean Connery is barely in that. Like, if you actually look at it,
but when he is in it, it's incredible.
It doesn't matter if he's barely in it. That line about fucking the prom queen, like that's Sean Connery was in that movie.
That was the link that he sent.
Yeah,
on Twitter.
It's
oh my god,
Tutti like a Ferrari. It's not mine. So good, man. So good.
I wonder what the actual top three. I agree with two of his top three. I agree with Die Hard. And what was the other one?
Terminator 2.
Yeah, Terminator 2, Die Hard. Those are two of the greatest movies of all time.
Yeah,
Terminator 2, I don't Die Hard, agree with The Rock.
So it's
The Rock is not in the top three.
When Dan Reichert originally got hired on, I've said this to you guys, not like off air and all that, but it's just like there was a ton of controversy about like why'd you choose him? Why not, you know, why not X person? Why not Y person? Mm. And like maybe one or two other game developers could have thought up the insanity that was the super, like the Mario Party thing, which really anybody who's not a premium member should consider being a premium member for that. Anybody that who
is, game is pretty incredible.
Yeah, like there's a 30-minute clip of the highlights of that, but really the whole thing is just it's a masterpiece. It's so good.
Probably the best thing that has come out of Dan joining the group here, though, is the relationship that has spawned between him and Drew.
Yeah. Like, somehow he brought Drew out. Like, Drew was like a quiet figure.
Yeah, of all the people in that entire fucking group, Drew was not the one I would think that he would gravitate towards.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what do you mean? He's just like Brad Shoemaker. They dress alike.
Like, it's great because Drew's always been this like, kind of an enigmatic figure who's known all these like weird. He tells some like weird, interesting facts.
He's
like,
going to Vietnam on vacation.
Yeah, he does interesting things.
And that's like, not his weirdest vacation.
Yeah, and Dan is like this like weird like semi closed minded, but thinks he's open minded, but isn't. And it's weird like crazy.
I think honestly, Dan legit lives in his own world.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he is so good at what he does, I guess. He is just like a master, like he is fearless to an extent and just like a master of his own world. And so
he was talking about that on I think it was one of the podcasts recently, I think, where he was arguing against Brad on like Brad saying like, you know, that he would never recommend somebody try to get into this industry if they were to ask. And like Dan just has this attitude. I think it's shown in some of the stories he's told and people told about him where like, if I want to do something, I will do it. Like it's going to happen. Yeah. It may not happen today, but it will fucking happen.
Yeah. And it's crazy because like he's led a life where that's kind of happened. And I don't think he knows how blessed he is, but at the same time, and he thinks like that's how the world works.
I think he does know how blessed he is and he is just like taking advantage of it every fucking day. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe. But I just need to say this just for a second here. I don't know how someone can say that he's open-minded because he does yoga and then calls yoga hippie bullshit and then says that he was introduced to yoga by none other than fucking Diamond Dallas Page himself in real life. Can he say anything like that?
He doesn't do yoga. He does Diamond Dallas Page yoga for cool guys.
But he's open-minded. Don't worry. Like he's
totally open-minded.
Yeah,
I don't know how to feel about the fact that he and Danny O'Dwyer are going to be here in town for the holidays. I have seriously considered tweeting him and be like,
"Of course, you should." I bet if you commit to it in a Dan Reichert fashion,
Dan Reichert would absolutely. Yeah,
I mean, in the Dan Reichert way, you won't know unless you try it.
You just need to believe,
unless it's mayonnaise.
But aioli's fine.
Aioli's fine. It's not mayonnaise.
Fucking hell. Mage
Knight, you've been pretty quiet about this. What is your? How do you feel about Dan?
How do I feel about Dan Reichert? He's kind of adorable in his own way. Like I don't know. I think he fits well. The chemistry is good. I would have rather seen someone with a different perspective than him. But you know, like he works.
You know what? It's nice to have somebody on the crew who appreciates Nintendo.
It's also letting Jeff get some, like, you know, he's able to get some time away from stuff.
Yeah, that's definitely true. He's taking a lot of pressure off Jeff.
Metal Gear Scanlan has single-handedly paid.
He's definitely produced a lot of fantastic content.
And I love the fact that, it took Dan coming in to quietly, stealthily bring back Endurance Run.
Yeah, yes. I cannot wait. I cannot wait for Metagross Scanlon 2. It's going to be so good.
Oh, my God.
When Drew encounters Metagross 2, it's going to Metagross Solid 2, it's going to be so the most great. Incredible thing ever.
The look on Drew's face when he said, "Mr. President," at the end
of the Solid 1. Yeah, that was great. They look over at each other, and Dan's just, like, smiling from ear to ear, and Drew's just like, "What the fuck?" It's so good. Like, Drew, you have no idea what you're even in for. It's going to take a while to get to there, because
I think one unfortunate thing, though, is, like, they kind of, especially with this, like, premium video they put up recently, they've kind of hyped up Metal Gear 2 quite a bit for Drew.
Yep.
And you think it's not going to live up? I think it's so bizarre. It's impossible not to, like, just be blown away by that game.
No. Story-wise, yes. That game plays, like, absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, no, at least you can shoot in first person. Compared to Metal Gear Solid 1, it is night and day.
Think about how much better that game's going to be when Drew can actually finally shoot in first person instead of just spraying off screen randomly.
Think about Metal Gear Solid 3 when he can finally control the camera. When he can control the camera!
Yes. Yeah, except that they take away your fucking radar. God damn
Metal Gear 3 is the best game. Let's not fight about this.
I'm in the middle of that one right now.
Okay, let's not start a war here.
It's good to get rid of the radar, because then you have to kind of, like, live with that. It's
Metal Gear Solid 3 games. I need my radar, goddammit.
Metal Gear 3 is the best game.
I'm now on Dan Riker's path where all three are maybe the best of the series, except for maybe 2. I don't love 2 as much.
I don't have a ton of love for 2.
Yeah, 2 is not a good game.
But 1, 3, and 4 are all the best games.
I don't know how anyone could say 4 is a great game.
I fucking love
4. Are we talking about the first, like, act of 4 or, like, the entire game?
I'm talking about all of 4 is the greatest game.
You are a crazy person. Anyway,
but I also think 3 is the greatest game, and 1 is the greatest game. I don't know. They're all fantastic.
But craziest game ever. Like, they're all just the craziest game.
I saw there was another piece of news this week. Oh, Windows 10. I actually find that interesting piece of news.
I find it interesting, like, the theory.
You mean not Windows 9?
Yeah, I love that they skipped 9. I don't know why. I think they missed a trick with that, though, because I think that the public definitely gets into the whole concept of the odd one being the good one is something that's stuck in the public, because everyone skipped Vista, Windows 7 was awesome. Everyone skipped 8.
They themselves said that one of the reasons they went with 10 was because this is going to be the final iteration, like, numbered iteration, and after this it's going to be incremental updates. So at that point, don't call it Windows 10, just fucking call it Windows.
Yeah.
I mean, the Windows. Keep it a
good name. Yeah.
Yeah, just call it, yeah, the Windows.
The Windows.
Microsoft.
Pretty reboot Windows. Of Windows.
The Windows. At least they didn't call the Windows 1. Like, whoever came up, someone mentioned the Bombcast or something, but calling Windows 1 would have been the worst. That would have been the worst thing ever.
Well, yeah, like, they themselves said that, like, someone already made Windows 1. It was Bill Gates, and, you know, it's.
Right.
Windows 1 already exists.
I've had a computer that operates on Windows 1 or 3.
To the original Xbox.
God, no.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think that the fact that they're ditching the start screen is fantastic. I love so many of the things they're saying about Windows 10. They're winning me over in a way.
One of the best things about it is assuming the rumors end up being true, I will be thrilled that they are giving it to me for free because I bought their shitty Windows 8.
Yeah, I heard a rumor that Windows 8.1 people are going to get it for free, and I hope that's true.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing a lot of that too. So hopefully,
it would be smart considering what Mac is doing these days.
I still miss transparencies though. I hope they put transparencies.
I thought I would miss transparencies, and I don't. So
I couldn't stand Windows 8, like, because I used it for about a week, and I didn't like it.
I like Windows 8.
I don't like my new operating system not looking as good as my old operating system. I'm sorry.
All the transparency was slow your kind of computer down.
What? My computer is so fast, I cannot tell the difference. Like, what are you talking about? Don't be crazy.
When SteamOS comes out, it's going to be the best thing ever, and no one's going to want to use Windows, and it's going to be great. SteamOS is the future.
I can't wait till Valve introduces their own, like, proprietary Office replacement, and then you just use...
Oh, God. Yeah, they have, like, some weird...
Steam,
like,
docs and spreadsheets and...
Or maybe Steam, Google buys Steam and creates one super operating system that has everything you want, and then you just completely replaces.
I'd say though, Google Docs is kind of all
yes.
I need now.
I don't use anything but Google Docs anymore. It is the one stop shop for office stuff. Like, it's not the most robust, but it's just robust enough that I can.
Our podcast notes are brought to you by Google Docs.
Yeah,
I type all messages in Google Docs because, like, if your computer crashes or something goes wrong, it's all just auto saved when you finish typing. So
it's in the cloud. Yeah.
In the cloud.
It's replaced Dropbox as my go-to for cloud.
Really? I don't use the drive too much, but I have so much Dropbox space now that I can't.
I mean, I used to use Word Docs, but have it on Dropbox.
Oh, okay. I see.
Now so I just use Google Docs for everything.
And just like the cloud, we've talked enough to fill up this cloud with enough to drop some plugs of precipitation.
Nope. Yeah, that didn't work. Nope.
We're getting close to 3 hours on this again. For recording try time.
Oh god, yeah.
Let's get some plugs.
Plugs? Awesome.
Plugs.
Great.
Mage Knight, do you have any plugs?
Yes, the Giant Bomb Gaming Hub, PC Gaming Hub on Steam Giant Bomb Forums. We have a Mumble server. You can find the address to that and the Steam PC Forums. Or the Giant Bomb PC Forums, rather.
You guys have a curator page, too, don't you?
We also have a curator page that we are slowly filling out with games that
selling out to game companies left and right.
I'm trying to focus on putting games on there that make for fun multiplayer experiences. Like, I put Baldur's Gate 2 on there because I think that's pretty fun to play with friends. And then I have another plug for the Giant Bomb Star Citizen group, Giant Bomb Space Duders. It's a Star Citizen organization. If you have a Star Citizen account, want to join that. We haven't done too much with it.
No, yeah. Just have fun with that. I'm going to not drop $1,000 on any video
games. Every time I think about that game, I just start going.
All right, fine. Screw you, haters. But we're going to have fun.
Have as much fun as you would like. you certainly paid for it.
I paid like 20, 30 bucks for it. So, right.
That'll be in the description. Dirt, any plugs? You want to plug Destiny again like you did last episode?
No.
No?
No. No, I don't. All right. Oh, I don't want to play Destiny. Why don't I play Destiny? I play games.
Because I edited in.
what did you edit in?
I didn't know this.
This is why you need to listen to the episode.
I stream it. This is the problem. It's almost impossible to get to the end of the episode if you stream it.
Duran, what plugs?
I don't think I really have plugs this week.
Premium membership for Giant Bomb. Thank you very much.
Yeah, there you go. Sure.
Yep.
And don't go buy HOTAS. Bad investment.
Yeah, I'm going to buy a HOTAS.
Don't buy HOTAS. No one needs to buy HOTAS.
I'm not going to buy a full HOTAS. I'm going to buy one of those like all-in-one. There's like a $60 stick that has
I'm not
like
kidding. Literally every time I think about Star Citizen, I go back and look at the fucking the X-52 every single time. And I'm afraid that one of these times I'm just going to have to pull
it. You're going to hit buy? Oh, God.
Because Cynic. If I play Star Citizen, I have to get a HOTAS. I will not play that with a keyboard.
Cynic, what plugs do you have?
Don't
say buy a HOTAS.
Buy a HOTAS, you guys.
God damn it.
I've never even heard that team. No, I haven't actually used a HOTAS. I've never used a HOTAS. I don't think I've really been a big guy for flight games. I don't know. My plug this week is just the same as it was when I can't think of anything, which is get a job on premium membership, man. Half the things we talked about on this show are premium stuff. It's kind of sad that you don't get so many awesome, like Avalon and like Giant Bomb Unplugged in general, like the premium streams by Giant Bomb East. Like you miss so much stuff if you don't. And it's kind of sad.
We didn't do it last year, but I really feel we need to do like a top five premium videos of the year every year.
Yeah.
I think it's
good. Oh, shit. I actually do have a real plug though. Fuck, I forgot. There's a book called The Martian.
I've heard about that because I keep thinking people are talking about The Martian Chronicles by Ray Bradbury and they're not.
Yeah, no, I'm going to look it up because I just picked it up. They talked about it on this week's Tested podcast, and they're going to do a spoiler cast for it in a couple days. It's The Martian by Andy Weir. And the thing about this book is not only is it a well-written book, the idea is it's like the third mission to Mars. No one really gives a shit anymore. And one guy, like something bad happens and one dude gets left behind. And it's a story about what that dude does. And the interesting stuff about the book is that it's so incredibly well researched that physics guys, so people like yourself, Mr. Mage Knight, actually check it off. Like this is like pretty accurate to how things would work if you're stranded on Mars. It's got massive buzz in terms of like this is the big new like mainstream sci-fi book that people are reading nowadays, like 14 was a couple weeks, like months ago. It's fantastic. I've read only like maybe the first chapter of it, and it is immediately engrossing. It is one of those books that you read like within the first two pages or so, you're hooked. If you stick with it, apparently it pays off. So The Martian by Andy Weir. It's on Audible, and that's how I'm listening to it. So.
Ooh, if we're talking about sci-fi book recommendations, I have one as well.
Go ahead.
It's called Ancillary Justice by Anne Leckie. And I don't want to say too much about it. You should just check it out if you like some old school sci-fi. It's really fascinating.
Awesome.
It's an what's excellent bit of. It's talking about the setting is almost like a. I don't know. It's weird. It's about a sci-fi race of like imperial people who are going to conquer the galaxy, and the main character is a artificial intelligence that sort of inhabits both a ship and a body, and the. Sort of the narrative sort of moves around between flash, like a present time and a flashback. And it's a cool bit of world building. It's very like, it's hard. She creates a really cool universe. It reminds me of like what sort of, Herbert did with Dune. It's like just this fascinating place that feels very like has an interesting culture, and everything about it's very interesting. Like the primary language of these people doesn't have much, like the culture doesn't have much in the way of gender. So like they have sexes, but they don't differentiate too much gender. So the main character will screw up genders all the time. Like she'll call everyone female, even though the description says they're masculine. It's interesting. Yeah. So there's a lot of cool stuff with that book. You should check it out. It's really cool. And she's like a first time author. And I'm really looking forward to the second book in that series.
Be careful. You really need to be careful. And this is probably just unsold me on the book right there. Because I as a person who reads many 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 books, I can tell you that it is. Very rare for a good first book to be followed by a good second book.
Oh, like, don't screw me.
Especially first-time authors. First-time authors are almost never capable of following up their first work because they spend like 8 years working on their first thing and like polishing it to like no end. And then their second thing has to be done, like massive, like quick turnaround because the publisher...
If it's in a consolation, the book itself works really well as a like self-contained story.
Oh, good. Okay, that is vastly preferred. Like, The Name of the Wind by Patrick Rothfuss is an excellent example of why I think, like, even in his case, where he spent years on the second book, it isn't as good as the first book.
Anyway.
Very cool. My plug is just going to be, again, at the end of this month, I want to say the 25th to 26th is when the Extra Life weekend charity live stream begins. I plan on doing a little bit, but even if you don't want to watch me, the Giant Bomb team, as well as the whole Giant Bomb community, as well as many, many other people, will be streaming that for, I want to say, just like kids, children's hospitals around the U.S. and hopefully around the world. Check that out and consider donating to that.
Nice.
Yep. From everyone here, this quid will have to go, so no plugs for him. Thanks for listening, everybody.
And goodbye?
I might put that in. I might also put that in. I don't know if I'm going to put what I'm saying right now in.
Probably.
If I...
We have to have a stinger. Like, that's part of the thing with this show.
I mean, I like putting the stingers post-music, but then sometimes I feel like, do I just like want to not do music? And even this is just getting too meta, so I don't know if I want to put this in.
Can we talk about the meta?
I think I think your meta is pretty interesting, but maybe it could be more interesting. I think you should be more like funnier with your meta stuff.
I try to focus on the micro.
The idea is to fade out audio and into the music, so it's like it sounds like we're having an ongoing conversation, and the music cuts us off rather than we're just trying to fill space, which is what we are doing.